This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by Shutterstock.com and Hover.com.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend Confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Welcome back, friends, to
Welcome
Weekend Confirmed.
You back.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
My name is Garnet Lee, and yes, we can discuss Keely and Doritos,
Yay.
Of course. That's Andrea Renee writing me notes, which no one else can see. She'd like to talk about Jeff Keely and Doritos and Halo and Mountain Dews, which we can, sure.
Those all sound like nice things, don't they?
No, because there's no Funyuns, and everybody knows that there's got to be Funyuns if you're going to do some hardcore gaming. This message brought to you by Frito-Lay Incorporated. Anyway, God, I'm wound up. I have no idea why. Andrew Yoon is here as well.
And, you know, I'm hankering for some gamer grub right now.
Oh, excellent.
Which flavor? Are you a PB&J kind of guy?
Oh, yeah, totally. You know, I love those peanut butter chips.
Yeah, the barbecue's actually pretty tasty, too.
No one has grabbed for the balls yet.
Wait, what?
Do you not remember that crap?
No.
Yeah, it was like this. B-A-L-L-Z. Yeah, they would hand it out in E3 every year.
Yeah.
Way into E3 every year.
I never tasted it, but it, like, why would anyone want to drink something that's playing on a double entendre on balls? Like I don't want to drink.
Hey, maybe some people are into
Actually,
that.
I saw a CSI episode recently about like a fake E3 where they were giving out like, you know, gamer grub equivalent, but it was actually heroin.
Nice.
What? Yeah. Yeah. This like hot chick was like giving drugs to guys, you know, dudes.
All right then. So before we decide to try and take over, we'll just look. Obviously, we are not the podcast to be doing snack foods of the gamer generation. We'll leave that to the pros and the experts at Giant Bomb, which you should listen to the Bombcast. It's fun. It's always good. And they definitely have that handled. So we will not try and walk on their territory. You're smiling.
No,
they do. I mean, like, you've listened to it before. Have you listened?
I have indeed.
They have it down. So why even go there? We would get completely fucking owned. So just forget about that. We'll move right on.
It is a competition.
We will move right on. We have plenty to talk about. Andrew has been playing Medal of Honor Warfighter.
The fighter of wars.
You've been fighting wars.
And war never changes.
No, it doesn't. It really doesn't.
And fighting never wars. And war fighting is fighting of wars.
Put your war face on.
And the thing that is the funniest thing of all is that evidently that's like a real operative word in the special forces, like war fighter. Hmm. But I guess if you're like a real operative,
you move up from battle participant.
What if you haven't actually officially declared war, though? Like,
that's non-combatant, by the way. Non-combatant to war fighter. Yeah, so there's that. I played Forza Horizon. I know some of you people were looking forward to me talking about that. I'm going to chaflop on it. And for those of you listening to the show for a long time, you know exactly what I'm talking about. What else we got to talk about? Jeff, I didn't even ask it. What have you been playing?
I'm going to be lame and tell you that I've been messing around with an angel's hat all week and I can't talk about it. And I know everyone hates when you say that, but that's really the only thing I've been playing.
Oh, you mean Funyuns?
Yeah, I mean that's really has taken up all my gaming time.
Someone asked me about what I was playing, and then I was like, I can't. So I said, you know, I said that it's something really amazing, and then they were like, well, give it a code name like Kanata with fruit, and I was like, I don't know, boysenberry, and then someone like we had this whole other thing, and then I was like, I know it's gonna be Funyuns, because they're little,
they're delicious,
they're little.
Oh yes, they're little
rings,
circular things.
But you know what is really funny because I just inspired.
Like saying angel's hat.
Angel's hat sounds nice too.
It sounds like a horror book or something. Angel's hat.
Next up from Dan Brown.
Did you know that Funyuns actually are just mostly cornmeal?
Most shit produced by shit ass places are mostly cornmeal.
Hey, don't you shit on Funyuns, Kanata.
The corn lobby and the subsidization of corn in this country, most of the shit you put in your body is fucking corn. So,
well,
although because of the
I have
of the
a horrible
drought,
image now,
you know,
of a turd that's made out of corn.
Now.
Right. Did you hear that they're feeding different shit to cows now?
Yeah, they're feeding candy.
Yeah,
you mean they're feeding grass to cows?
No, God, aww. No, not grass,
heaven
not natural shit. They're giving them candy,
stale candy,
which is made of corn syrup, which is cheaper than giving them actual corn.
Wait, they're feeding cattle candy. Wait, yes. Why are we talking about this? I thought we were talking about video games.
Vote,
we
were everybody
all. Kanata got on like this tyrant. He was like,
I've been playing a lot of.
Killing America.
He put his tinfoil hat on.
We've
his eyes
a lot of
lit
politics
up.
Games this week. Wow. It is the season, man. It's
for
this,
tinfoil
this next week. It's coming up.
It is.
But yes, voting. Very excited for Angel's
and in
hat.
Anticipation of that, you got to download for 20 to 40 minutes a new dashboard for your Xbox Live.
Yay.
And you were like, oh my God, I can't wait to see it. It's going to be amazing.
Are you guys, you've been playing a bunch of AC3, right? Can you talk about that?
I actually don't have somebody else at the MCOM offices who's responsible for doing the review, so they have the build.
MCOM. Really?
Which, by the way, we hit 5 million subscribers today.
And the rule is...
Very huge accomplishment.
Once you
hit
5 million, you have to abbreviate MCOM.
Is that really a thing now? Is it MCOM?
It's just what we say internally.
Huh. Of course, because it would be so tiring to say
machinima.
There's a lot of syllables, okay?
Machinima.
Oh God, I can't go on.
Don't be punks.
I mean, granted, machinima is pretty hard to spell.
It is
machinima.
MCOM.
Yeah, it also sounds like a potential like boss battle in like Tekken.
How's snews.com going, guys?
Oh, dude, it's the best.
At G-Sly.
Snong. Snocom. Anyway, but yeah, there's a new dashboard on your Xbox. What do you guys think about the new dashboard? It's like, I was very uninspired.
Yeah, second verse, same as the first.
Like,
yeah.
it's
what's the difference?
I don't even know what the difference is.
Slightly different.
Internet Explorer, you guys.
Yes.
Internet Explorer.
Finally.
Okay, yes, that's a big deal.
Slightly it different is. Layout. So you have like...
If you don't own a PlayStation 3, it is.
There's one sort of billboard image in the middle for each of the sections now, and then surrounding boxes, whereas before, remember, it had like a box on the side. The set of box. It's a little bit more elegant, but still, it's really clunky.
Here's the only thing I was excited about this update, and I haven't tried it yet, even though I was excited. Smart Glass. Right?
Comes out today.
Yeah.
So if you're out there listening to the show, you should go to your favorite portal, grab... for your device, whether it be Windows Phone, Android, or Apple, the Smart Glass app, and
because
like a nice little companion app.
You weren't here last week, but I talked extensively about my hands-on with the Wii U, and I have turned a corner. I am much more excited about that console than I have been up to this point. And one of the things that they showed that looks really cool, and I hope is an integration that Smart Glass picks up on, and I'm sure it will, is how much it works in integrating your television viewing into being controlled by the Wii Pad and being able to search for a show independent of what service delivers it to you.
Yes.
So you can like say, hey, I want to watch Modern Family. And then it shows you, oh, it's available on Netflix. It's available on ABC and it's available on, you know, Hulu or whatever. And then you just point at where you want to watch it from. That's really cool.
You mean what Bing on Xbox Live does?
Yeah.
Which you'll be able to control on your smart glass device.
Right.
Or with your voice.
That's how I got to this.
But
topic.
Nintendo TV also, you know, is compatible with I think TiVo DVR.
Yeah, but
so
only TiVo
right now. Only
TM.
Yeah. Yes, literally TiVo.
Yeah.
But I mean, at least you know they're thinking about it. You know, so it's pretty cool.
I just keep thinking that it's like a step behind. Like they're
which one, the Wii U or the Smart Glass?
The Wii U, like they're trying to catch up.
They're the first thing. How can they be trying to catch up when they're the first one to have a pad that attaches to their console like that as a gamepad?
I mean,
they're trying to catch up with the future ahead of times now behind things.
They're trying to catch up to the GameCube, Game Boy Advance connectivity.
I don't think
they're
that having the gamepad with the console is like so. For me as a gamer, the type of gamer that I am, I don't look at that and go, oh, my God, I must have that. That's amazing.
Well, you're wrong. We didn't ask.
I can see why you're saying. I think that is. I think it's a harder sell. It's not as immediate a sell as some other innovative things like the Wii's remote. I think was demonstrably interesting right away. It was, hey, you've never really done anything quite like this before. You've never played tennis like this. You've never bowled like this.
And that's
Family's
why,
awesome.
And that's why Kinect was so much more interesting than PlayStation Move, you know, because right. PlayStation Move was like, oh, well, you know, this is like the Wii, you know.
Yeah.
It might have been a better, you know, tech experience or whatever, but, you know, in terms of, like, grabbing our imagination, you know, Kinect was like, oh, well, but this is the future.
Mm-hmm. And I totally agree that this is not as immediately exciting.
Mm-hmm.
But I was really, really...
I thought you said you really liked it after you played with it. You turned a corner.
That's what I'm saying.
I do want to be sold, though. I would love for you to convince me why I should be excited about it, because I want to be excited about it, because I'm a huge Nintendo fan, and I've always loved Nintendo products.
The games that I played, Zombie U, while it doesn't blow my socks off visually, I think the implementation of the pad is really interesting, and it's very different than anything I've ever played before. And I really want to play that game. It's a true survival horror game, and like using the pad and how it uses diverting your attention between the main television screen and the pad as a game mechanic, as a, you know, danger.
I didn't know that's interesting.
Yeah, it continues live as you're playing. So like if you go to switch a weapon, like the game doesn't pause.
Right.
So like a zombie could be coming to get you, and then you need to switch weapons because you're out of bullets, and it doesn't pause the game.
Resident Evil's done that
so
before.
The metaphor is that you're diving into your backpack and you're looking down onto your pad as you would be looking down into a backpack. So I think that's
so do you actually have to physically take the pad down and does it use the gyroscope so you're looking down into it?
It uses the gyroscope in certain things, but not that. It basically just makes the screen you're looking at
mimic
not helpful.
Okay.
You're seeing yourself in third person and you're seeing just you. So you're not able to look at your surroundings. You're mm-hmm. just looking down at your pad trying to manipulate that and leaving yourself open to attack.
It would be cool if you used a gyroscope and then you have to like use the stylus to like unzip the bag and then actually rummage through it.
That would be too much. That'd be too much.
I think. I mean, it's like how no game actually has like realistic reloading of weapons because
right.
people get so pissed off spending 10 minutes putting bullets individually in their weapons.
Well, I gotta load the clip. Oh shit, I hope they don't get in.
Yeah. Yeah, and when you reload with only having used 3 bullets in your clip, and
but that's the point of video games is you don't want. I mean, for me anyway, I don't want a realistic experience. I think the one of the highlights of video games is this fantasy idea. You know, like I don't need it to feel like I'm actually looking in a real backpack. I want to be superhuman.
Before we get into esoteric conversations about fantasy versus reality, you asked to be sold on having a gamepad that has a touchscreen on it. Yes.
Yes.
And why do you not think that is? Why are you not sold on that? Just on the face of it alone, I'm sold on that from the extent that I don't have a way to play with my home consoles that does that right now. And I love playing with my touch devices. And I think that it opens up a number of new ways to play that are more to me interesting than just wait. So first, the Wii remote changed some of the way we interact with games, right? Because now you had a device in your hand that had a accelerometer on it, and it had like the infrared system for measuring where it was in space. And so you moved your hand around physically in space. But I never liked that much for fine fidelity games, because even with the Plus system, it was still relatively coarse, right? I never felt like I had the control playing, say, a shooter that I had with a twin stick system, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I have a touch screen in my hand, though, I have a very precise input method. My finger on this touchpad, very, very, like, I feel it positioned. I know where it is in space. I can relate to what it's doing also on the screen. And I have a very nice, interesting way to interact now that's complementary, because it's right there on the pad, to my thumbsticks and buttons. I think there's a lot of cool potential of things they could do with that.
I agree.
I think there's definitely some potential. Absolutely. I just think with the games that they've announced for their launch window, we're not really seeing anything that's knocking my socks off for the utilization of that gamepad. And I think that's where my big hang up is. Really, Zombie U is the only game that I've seen so far that's doing really kind of interactive, interesting new things with the gamepad. Everything else is
on
like basic
count.
Gestures or just tapping, things that to me are not. Like, they're not wowing me, because we've seen this in smartphones and iPads and other tablet devices, in things like
but
the Vita.
That doesn't invalidate it, just because we've seen
it. I know
it
doesn't invalidate it, but what I'm saying is, why would I spend my money on that when I can get that experience somewhere else?
Let me say two things.
Mm-hmm. Number one.
First of all, the COD Blops 2 that I saw played on it was fantastic. Indistinguishable from any other console. Looked great, moved silky smooth, awesome. And while this isn't a feature that I need, the idea of I'm using the television to play that game and somebody comes in and wants to watch TV and I can just shoot it onto my into my hands and keep playing while they watch television, or should somebody want to join me, we don't have to split the screen. I can literally play, have my own screen and they have their own screen and we play like that. They have the pro controller. That is an very, I think that's a very big deal for a lot of people. Not me, but a lot of people. Dorm rooms, little brothers, families, which is what this is squarely aimed at, right? Mm. So that's cool. And the just the regular touchscreen implementation of that is pretty cool too, just like being able to call in airstrikes really easily and having the full map on your screen. That's cool stuff. And the second thing is, and you may laugh at this, but Sing Party is cool. And the idea of having your own – to do karaoke and not have to look at the television screen, to literally be able to turn to your audience as you would in a karaoke bar and read on your own screen the lyrics that the whole room isn't getting. They're getting something different on the television that they can look at, and you can read your own screen and sing to them. That's cool. Now, again, not a game that blows my skirt up, but – It is cool, and it's a really cool implementation, and it's those kinds of things that I think people are going to...
Sold. Sing Party. Yeah. Wii U. I'm in.
All right, let me quickly take a break here so that we can pay a couple of the bills. This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by Hover.com. Hover provides simple, clean domain and email management tools. One of my favorite Hover features is that they have a no-hold policy for customer service calls Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern. Whenever I call, I get a live person, and they don't put me on hold. Visit Hover today at weekendconfirmed.hover.com. If you need a domain, use offer code weekendconfirmed and get 10% off. That's weekendconfirmed.hover.com. We thank Hover for their support. So you're sold on the Wii U, clearly.
I'm getting one. I listen, you know, it's not...
And I want to bring this back to Smart Glass a little bit.
Right.
Because that was where we started here, was that there was a very... there's a big fall update. Remember, we used to get excited about Xbox Live updates. It was like a big deal.
Well, I mean, they sort of pushed it to the point where... What else are they going to add that's going to really make me excited?
That's certainly true.
And they Smart Glass is cool, but it's different when it, as we've said it over many generations, it's different when it comes with the system. And as cool as Smart Glass has the potential to be, I don't know how well it's going to be supported, and that remains to be seen.
What do you mean how well it's going to be supported? It's across, like, virtually everybody has a device, and it's not, and they're not, I mean, one thing they're doing that's right is they're not making it only on Windows. It's a multi-platform device.
That's very smart.
So you'll be able to have this on whatever device, Smart Glass. You'll be able to have it on whatever you want. And another thing that I thought was very cool, and I wondered whether they did this on purpose or not, is they were demoing the Internet Explorer functionality, and they were like showing, you know, you can use your tablet to pinch and zoom on pages and stuff.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I wish I could, like,
Can't do that on Wii U.
Can't do that on Wii U because it's only got single touch. But I think that I think that it's by virtue of having that interface that they felt good about bringing the browser. Although it took them forever to get a browser on the. Do we want a browser on our television through our console?
I don't.
I don't know. It's not that big
no
a deal.
Desire for that.
But you have some other options though. I mean, so look, Windows 8 out this week. No one excited about that because there's no gaming buzz behind that whatsoever. But a lot of the push for this also is tied into their Windows 8 campaign.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the music service that now brings Xbox Music to your Xbox with tons of streaming options. So they're still building a very nice, you know, multimedia, video control center built around the Xbox Hub.
Yeah. I mean, I really am
with
excited
a neat controller and Smart Glass.
For what Smart Glass can do. I just am curious if developers of games are going to really put some resources behind it or not.
I don't think so. It's just way too close to the end of the generation, you know? It's, like, not gonna...
Really?
I mean, it's something they might throw in, but, like, you know, how many more years of Xbox 360 games do you think we have, you know? Like,
a year or two.
Yeah, and I don't...
And I think that whatever they're doing with Smart Glass would naturally carry over to whatever the new machine would be. Why would they not?
Oh, definitely.
They would carry it right over.
That's a given.
I mean, I think that one of the things... So
it's going to be like Xbox Live. It's not tied to a particular generation of console. It's a thing that their platform now supports.
I mean, you'll be able to see. You should be able to see right now because there's Smart Glass support in Forza Horizon.
Mm-hmm.
There's also going to be Smart Glass support in Halo Waypoint. Mm-hmm. And I think that it'll be interesting to see what sort of additive elements are done in there. I would be really surprised if there's not some kind of Call of Duty Elite Smart Glass service application or something. Like while you're playing Call of Duty, you'll be able to see, you know, what's going on in the elite world, what you're leveling up, what sort of achievements you're doing, maybe even what your friends are up to. Like there's a number of really, really cool potential applications for this that I think that that Microsoft will get behind, because, you know, we've talked a lot about the tech side of what a next gen console will look like. Don't you think that a big part of what Sony and Microsoft's next consoles will be about the evolution of the experience? Like right now, both of these consoles have fairly similar login. Here's your front door. Here's a bunch of things to choose from the menu. Very one layer of interaction sort of experiences. Like really, it's a pretty... the reason there wasn't much they could do was because within the framework they built on Xbox, there's not a lot they could do for interactivity.
And you think that that's going to change in the next generation?
I definitely think that'll change the next generation. I think the next generation...
Out of the gate?
Absolutely. I think that whatever effort they're putting into the hardware development right now, they're putting equal, if not more, emphasis into the user experience. And that... Because, look, they've got to learn...
I would be shocked if that's the case. I hope it is.
Really?
Yeah, I would be surprised if that's the case. I hope that there's a paradigm shift in how we interact with our consoles right from the menu system, but I don't think that's going to be the case.
I think Microsoft definitely. Sony, on the other hand, has proven that they don't understand.
I think the PlayStation interface to me is completely subpar compared to the Xbox Live interface.
Okay, now why would you say that? Because I find them to be relatively similar. They're both a sets of menus that you navigate with some sticks and click on a button and it takes you into a layer of menu.
I don't think this generation we're really seeing too much of a difference in terms of an average consumer interacts with the interface.
What do you think they could do differently that they would embrace?
That they wouldn't?
You're saying you expect the next generation.
What do you think they want to embrace? I mean, that's kind of... Here's what makes me think that it has to go that way. So think about how much of the Kinect project was tied into all of those years at CES watching the Microsoft experimental guys who were talking about ways of user interaction. And of course, you know, they were obviously experimenting with Surface and touch. Touch got away from them. Apple beat them on touch.
But you don't think that the way up to this point Kinect has been integrated into the base OS experience of the 360 isn't completely clumsy?
I think it is totally clumsy because it's been layered on top of an interface that wasn't designed to be done that way in the first place, mm-hmm. right?
It doesn't give me confidence that a new console would change that.
I don't know if clumsy is the right word that I would agree with. I think that, you know, Microsoft recognized that their interface was not Kinect friendly in the beginning, and they did, you know, an update.
Ruined it.
No, I don't think they ruined it. It's funny
it's
because
way worse,
I just used my Kinect. Like, I have a friend staying with me visiting from out of town, and she's never seen a Kinect before because she's not a gamer, and so she didn't. And we were like, hey, let's watch a movie. Let's watch Cabin in the Woods. I can rent it right from my Xbox. So I turn it on.
Should have watched Paranormal
and
Activity 4.
I used all the vocal
Kinect all through it.
I used all the vocal commands using the Kinect, and she was like, "Oh my god, I can't believe that you just did that!" Like it blew her socks off. You know, and I feel like sometimes we get so buried in the tech, being in the industry as much as we are, that we forget that how kind of fun and amazing these features are to like the average consumer.
They're,
you know,
fun and amazing and completely useless.
Well, they're not completely useless. It was much easier for me to just say Bing, Cabin in the Woods, and have all of the different options.
Jeff,
just
why'd you say completely
magically,
useless?
Magically appear. That was not useless. That was actually really helpful instead of me having me to type in all of the letters, you know, and look
also,
for it.
Also, you want...
That was completely functional.
You want the iPad 4, which doesn't really have anything...
No,
the iPad 3.
I'm a hypocrite. I am a complete... I'm not saying it's... I shouldn't have said completely useless, but I think it's whiz-bang and not functionally additive. I get your situation of saying, you know, I didn't have to type it in. Yeah. I just find it to be more we can do this rather than it's
I think a lot of the features you talked about Wii U are also, well, we can do this, like zapping your game to your gamepad instead of watching it on the TV, you know?
Well,
like,
for single television households who, you know, where time on the television is at a premium or a series of negotiations that, you know, one person has to concede what the television is doing.
But I mean, that's the thing. So, you know, for, you know, some people, I think, you know, it's like, on the surface, it's like, oh, wow, this, you know, this is really cool. You know, other people, it'll be super useful. And for other people, it'll be like, I'm never going to use this. You know, I think the intrinsic value of all these things really depends on...
on the user, yeah. The user. Absolutely. Because Connect has also been really great for some people that I know in my life that use it almost daily for fitness. Like, I mean, that's probably where the Connect has really shined in the software department as far as, like, interactive gaming experience has been all these fitness games or these dance games that, you know, people use for exercise, you know? So
don't confuse what I'm saying
with... You said completely useless, Kanata.
No, don't confuse what I'm saying with dissing the Connect as a whole. I'm not
okay.
I'm not doing it. I'm saying
look,
that...
Look, in a post-Dishonored landscape, you have to think...
Fuck everybody. No, the what where this conversation started and what I thought we were talking about is the integration, the way the dashboard of the Xbox 360 has evolved and the way they basically fucked it up to add Kinect support. That
was what I was hoping we would talk about. Yes.
I think changing the menu system into a series of giant square blocks that are just easier to wave my hand in front of. Is not better.
It's not. I agree. And anyway, so it was a stopgap fix, to my mind, to accommodate this sort of, look, I need to be able to control with my hand, and it's not really working in our current layout. What could we do? And then the bigger problem here is that the growth inside of the Xbox Live system in this generation has resulted in a ridiculously overcomplicated front end. There is so much, there are so many layers of content. If you were to do a wireframe right now for that front end, think of all of the layers that wireframe would become.
But they're not
each
losing
of the section,
any of that.
Each
in
of
the
sections
generation.
Across the top, and then underneath each section, all of the different data elements that you're trying to get to. And there's some of them that are duplicate other sections. You can find something here, you can find it in another spot, and it's so many layers of stuff. And then it doesn't necessarily group things together in any sort of way that makes sense to it. I think
but that's not a vestigial piece of from older versions of it. That they brought that on themselves.
Right.
That's not.
No,
it was a ground.
That's why I'm saying that I think
level redesign of that system that resulted in that.
This is why I think that the next consoles, a big part of that is going to be conquering that. Because really, if you think about the wireframe thing, like that is what the cross media bar on the PS3 is. It's just a little more. It's a little more abstracted in that it is literally a bar. It is one axis and another axis, so that those elements of action that you want to go hit on are separated into individual pieces.
And that's stupid ass as well. I mean, I'm being the hater today, but I can't tell you how many times I've wanted to just delete some shit off my hard drive on my PS3, and I've gone back and forth sliding across. I can't remember where the is it under games? Is it under system?
That's always been my issue with the PS3 interface.
It's going to evolve. That's why this is going to be, dude. That's why this is such a
big deal. I hope you're right. But everything I've seen up to this point leads me down the road of these guys. They could have fixed it already.
Someone's going to get it right. You're going to turn on a next gen system in a couple of years, and it's going to have your presence, and you're going to have a very
presence.
Yeah, and you're gonna have a very clean and attractive and easy to use interface that you're gonna know what your friends are doing, what they've been up to, what they're interested in doing, and it's all gonna be communicated to you
through gigantic ads.
Well,
surrounded by other ads.
Now the advertising is a problem because I don't know how they work the advertising into what I think would be a good user experience, and I am concerned that will be a
which is ironic for us to talk about having just shoehorned an ad into the middle of our discussion earlier.
Well, I do want to ask you though. Do you really think that they came up with the new Metro layout for Kinect? Because I'm pretty sure they did it for the Windows phone, not for Kinect, and then they just wanted to port that visual experience over.
Well, I think you're seeing a creative theme that's running throughout their design direction right now.
Right.
Well,
and a lot of people are complaining about Windows 8 because it feels like you're on a gigantic phone on your, you know, because it's built for like touch screen displays on your desktop.
Right.
You know,
I mean, I think it's like really bold on Microsoft's part. It's a really risky move on their part. I'm amazed that they actually have the balls to do that, you know? I mean, I do think that's where the future of computing is, but I think that's like a completely different conversation. I wanted to ask you, though, how do you get confused about where things are on the XMBs? Like, is it under game? Was I playing a game or was I listening to music? Like, I don't understand.
Have you met Jeff Kanata before?
What does that mean? I get easily confused?
I put a Blu-ray in there. Is that a video? Or
no, I made a very specific example of data that I wanted to remove, which seems like it would be under system, or maybe it's tied to the actual game. I I never confuse whether I'm playing music or a Blu-ray, which is not the example that I brought up.
He's getting a little excited now. Okay. We'll give everybody a little chance to sit
down. I would be willing to bet that we'll get some feedback that people agree that the cross-media bar is unnecessarily obtuse, and I think that there are
if you're voting for Jeff, text 773 right now with right. Go Jeff. But if you're on Andrew's team,
your argument is try sucking less, and you could say that to everything.
No, that's not my argument at all. I think people interact with interfaces differently, and they should be as intuitive as possible.
All right, mm-hmm. How about we talk about some games? We'll take a little break. Because we've done like the entire first segment of
on interfaces.
Interface.
Because
on the other side of this, we can talk about war faces.
Yeah.
Enough interfaces. We're going to come back and talk about war faces. This episode is brought to you by Shutterstock.com. Over 20 million stock photos, vectors, illustrations, and video clips. If you're looking for images for your website or blog, print ads, trade show swag, or even apps, Shutterstock.com is the way to go with over 10,000 new images added every day. With Shutterstock.com, you can choose between image packs and monthly subscription packages. Choose whatever fits your needs and never have to compromise. They also have enhanced license access. This means that if you have an image and want to run it on a print ad or swag for your trade shows, they can get you an enhanced license for any image. Sign up for free. Go to Shutterstock.com. There's no credit card needed. And when you find the images you like and decide to purchase, use the offer code WeekendConfirmed10 and get 30% off of any package. That's Shutterstock.com and use the offer code WeekendConfirmed and the number 10. And now, Warfighter. A tender moment with Medal of Honor's second attempt in this relaunch post-World War II saga to be a more compassionate, loving game. Right?
Actually, yeah. I mean, there's there's these CG sequences which take place in a hospital where Preacher, the main character, is reflecting on like what he did, and it's very heartfelt and uncanny valley and really just awkward to watch, just the CG characters.
But I thought they spent millions on their
you know, when
FMV.
When you have Frostbite 2 as your game engine, just stick to the game engine. I don't think you really need to do fancy pre-rendered cinematics that look worse than...
Here's my beginning point for talking about Warfighter. And keep in mind, like, I've only seen demos of the game, and every time they were demoing the game while they were still doing the game before they went like radio dark, they like everything was like super planned, and there's like we're showing you this little slice, and it's like super hype machine, and I never even had any real clear idea of like why the hell is it Warfighter and what the hell does that mean.
I mean, I don't have the answer for you. I'm
why?
Sorry.
Why is it war
wait?
Fighter?
So you've been playing it and you don't know?
You're a fighter of wars.
Yeah.
What's complicated about that?
Yeah.
But I mean, there's typically a signature reason that. So, for instance, Call of Duty Black Ops was about, you know, weird, crazy Black Ops, off the record stuff, redacted, you know, CIA stuff.
But like, you're not even really getting that in Black Ops 2, though. You know. It's none of that.
It's near future, but it's stuff from the future that will be redacted after it happens. It's another one of those cases.
It's predacted.
Exactly. But you know what I'm saying is that like there must have been
differentiator.
Okay, how about this?
That's what it
is. I mean,
well, is it because that seems to be the consensus is that everything about this Medal of Honor game is just arbitrary differentiation. And
what
and
does Halo Combat Evolved mean?
It means it's of combat evolved from.
Right.
I think that probably stems from when Bungie was making a strategy game that they wanted to be a hybrid action strategy game, and they wanted to evolve the nature of real-time strategy combat of the era. Bam.
Yeah, but it's
that still sounds like PR.
A warfighter is a guy who fights wars.
All right. So then give me this. What the hell is the game about? Because I didn't even know. It's like operatives and they're running around and shooting people and it looks dusty.
Does it really matter? I mean, how many people are
yes,
playing?
Yes, we're asking. Come on.
How many people play these games in order like to understand a narrative? Like, how many of you remember what happened in the last Medal of Honor game? You know?
Well, I remember vaguely. No, it wasn't really. There was a lot of controversy around the last Medal of Honor with the whole. Having, you know, insurgents or the actual Taliban in the multiplayer.
Well, the controversy wasn't about the content of the game. It was the fact that the opposing force, quote unquote,
which is the content in the game,
was named the Taliban in multiplayer. You know, like it's
Well, it, you also take out a number of Taliban in the single player campaign.
So, basically what you're saying, Andrew, is you don't want to talk about this game.
No, I mean, I just, okay, so, you know, disclosure, I actually liked the previous Medal of Honor game. I thought the single player, you know, had a lot of really good ideas. I actually thought the multiplayer was lackluster, even though it was developed by DICE. It sort of felt like they phoned that in.
So remember that was a strange situation because Danger Close did the single player and then DICE cobbled in a multiplayer. It was really weird. It's a different engine. Like, the whole thing was strange.
Yeah, it was a Frostbite 1 for multiplayer and Unreal Engine 3 for single player. This time around, Danger Close doing both modes. And, you know, what I really liked about the previous Medal of Honor game is I just liked how you move through the environment. Like, it really encouraged you to take your time. Go slow, check your corners. When you like breach, you actually want to like go in and, you know, look to the left, look to the right. And the weapons felt great. I like the lean and peek, you know, that's something that I wish more first person shooters would do. So there's a lot of stuff that I really liked about it. I think the weapons had like a really good weight to them. And I feel like a lot of that's missing in the new one, you know, where, you know, yeah, you're leaning and peeking, and that, you know, that's still, you know, fundamentally, I think, is an improvement over other first-person shooters. But then the weapons, you know, they don't feel as distinct anymore. You know, all the submachine guns sort of feel identical. And there's just very few of those moments where you're moving around the environment in a way that you think a soldier would move around the environment.
How do you mean?
Probably because, you know, there's, like, so many set pieces now. You know, before, you know, you were just, like, you know, a dude in a desert, and there's...
Now you're a warfighter.
And now you're a warfighter. I mean, one of my favorite moments of the previous Medal of Honor game was when you're just, you know, you're just shooting, just offering covering fire while your squad mates actually go in for the kill. And, like, it's not that thrilling, I guess. You know, you're just literally just constantly
you're just
shooting.
Just going covering fire.
But, you know, it's like, an important tactical decision that you're, like, a part of. You know, in this game, the first mission, you know, you blow up this truck and then, like, this building starts falling down and you have to, like, run through and, like, there's explosions all around you. And I'm like, well, that doesn't seem very, you know, I don't think our, you know, spec ops are doing that. That doesn't seem so grounded in any reality. I certainly didn't read the headlines of, you know, four dudes running through, like, exploding trucks, you know, in order to jump onto a boat at the last second as the pier explodes behind them. Like, I don't, like, you know, it's like,
it sounds like a scene from a Modern Warfare video of a couple of years ago.
Yeah, it's
their competition.
But it's not just their competition. It seems like that they've made a conscious decision to really mimic that structure. Is that a way to put it?
I think so. I mean, so there's like, I actually surprisingly don't hate the game. I think it's really flawed.
Because the reviews have been really brutal.
I mean, what the big problem with you know, the modern warfare genre is that you have to bring an A game, and if you bring anything less than that, it's really like, why even bother, you know? And it's a game that feels half baked. There's a lot of glitches. My game hard crashed at one point. There's just like a lot of stupid AI decisions, you know. But there's like a few moments that I actually really enjoy. I think we were talking about this earlier. There's a sniping mission where you're trying to take out these targets. They're about, like, you know, a few hundred meters away. And the really interesting thing is you have to account for, you know, the drag on the bullet. You know, obviously the further it goes, the lower it'll fall. You'll have to account for the fact that there's wind. And, you know, that moment I'm like, oh, this really feels like what the last Medal of Honor game was doing. There's only, like, you know, six or seven dudes that you have to take care of, you know. And they're not shooting a million rocket launchers at you, you know. It didn't feel explosive, and it felt like something that a real, you know, soldier might do. It's interesting that they don't teach you how to use the sniper rifle. Like, you have to look at the numbers, you know, so that you can account for that. So, like, you sort of have to, like, know, well, oh, well, that guy's 200 meters away, so I'll aim, like, you know, two notches above, you know, and stuff like that.
Well, I thought the whole hitch of EA's fighters, I mean, Battlefield and Medal of Honor included, the recent installments, are kind of hooked on this idea that it's supposed to imitate real life. I mean, even in the last Battlefield ad campaign, they're like, is it real or is it Battlefield? You know, and Warfighter is on the same engine that Battlefield 3 was on. Mm-hmm. So, and the comments that I've gotten from people that are playing are like, oh my God, some of the cutscenes look so real. It looks so pretty and like could be real life. And I kind of think, well, if they're going to try to make a realistic, you know, fighting military shooter, that they should stay true to that, not try to mimic the kind of more arcadiness of a Call of Duty game or of some of these other military shooters that are out there.
And I think that's really the frustrating thing about Medal of Honor, at least the new one. I think the previous one, you know, I think it found that like balance between being, you know, arcadey enough where it's approachable. You don't really, you know, you don't want one of those games where you get shot once in the leg and you're like limping through the rest of the game, you know, while still being, you know, more realistic, quote unquote, than a Call of Duty. But this game, it doesn't find that balance, you know. It's really a spectacle, you know, oftentimes. And for me, you know, I feel like, so it's not very good at doing the things that Medal of Honor, you know, the previous one did. But on the other hand, like, you know, it's not as good at doing what Call of Duty does, you know. It's in this, like, weird middle zone where it's like, well, it's still not as bombastic. The combat isn't as explosive, you know. You know, in Call of Duty, you can fight, like, hundreds of dudes because, you know, you just go down your sight. You know, you're automatically locked onto them, shoot, then do it again. You know, it's pretty quick. And Medal of Honor doesn't inherently have that kind of... It doesn't encourage that gameplay. So when you have those kinds of scenarios, it feels really awkward. But on the other hand, like, it doesn't really compete with Battlefield 3 either. I know it is running on Frostbite 2, and there are moments where it's, like, really pretty. But there's so many moments where it's just like, this actually looks worse than Medal of Honor 2010. It's like, what are you guys doing? The textures are bad.
Hmm. And you think that was part of the patch issue that they tried to fix?
I don't know.
I mean, it's just a design flaw. Like,
I don't think it's
there.
A design flaw. I think it's just, I don't think they finished the game. I think, you know, it's like there's only so much you can do in whatever time you're given.
If we look at the release timing, I think that it stands to reason that's likely that someone said, we got to be out before Black Ops 2. We got to get this out before Black Ops 2. Whether that's right or wrong, we could certainly discuss.
I mean, it certainly tries ambitious things. There's this one level which takes place in the middle of a hurricane, and that's, like, really cool, but the water effects are so bad that it's, like, the entire effect is just ruined, you know? It's actually, you're like, this water looks like, you know, something you'd find on, like, N64 or something like that, you know?
Oh, no.
And the color palette's just really unattractive. Battlefield 3, you know, they actually went for, like, a really unique, like, thing with their lighting system, so it's sort of, there's lens flares everywhere, you know? But, you know, it looked distinct. With Medal of Honor, it just sort of looks murky, you know? You're like, well, everything's blue, you know? Like, blue and brown and gray, like, so I think from an art perspective, you know, they didn't really, it's not as pretty as Battlefield 3, it's not as Hollywood explosive as a Modern Warfare, and it's not as realistic as the last Medal of Honor game, so what is it? You know?
They've missed the mark multiple eras, it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean...
But there is stuff you liked about it.
It's a warfighter of all trades.
I mean, for me, if that was, like, the one game that I picked, you know, the one shooter, military shooter that I picked up this year, you know, would I be, you know, utterly crushed? No, you know, if I lived in a bubble where Call of Duty Black Ops 2 didn't exist, yeah, whatever, you know, it's like, it's in spite of all of its flaws, it's competent in many areas, but, you know, realistically, we have to be like, well, but there are all these other games, you know, you could still just play Battlefield 3 if you want, you could just jump into Call of Duty, and you know, I think some of the reviews out there might have been a bit too harsh just because of EA's approach, you know, to the marketing. And you know, obviously, you know, it's fun to, like, you know, shred a game to pieces, you know. But, it you know, it's competent. You know, I'm not dreading playing it like I did Resident Evil 6, you know.
Yeah.
I have that at home now. Ariel and I are going to play it co-op, I think.
Yeah.
Well, we finished Borderlands 2 and bought the season pass right away because we're like...
Yeah, I need to buy the season pass. I haven't done that
right
yet.
Right away because we're just hooked
I am interested in replaying Resident Evil 6 once new patch comes out.
Notes on that.
Yeah, seeing if it's worthy of a re-review because I think, you know, for me, the biggest problem with that game was the camera just because it makes it unplayable. You know, there's
camera's
a lot of...
terrible.
There's a lot of design decisions which won't ever get fixed by a patch and it'll still remain a bad game. But there's, like, a big difference between a bad game that's at least, like, functionally playable and a bad game that just isn't. And that's what Resident Evil 6 is right now. It just isn't playable.
Really? You had actually lowered all the way to not playable.
I played it, unfortunately.
I mean, if I were using Polygon's review metric, I would give it a 1. Yeah, it's a game that isn't finished. It's not. It's unplayable and broken, like...
That patch is actually not due until December, though.
Enjoy the ride, and then, you know, go back in when the patch comes out.
The notes they sent out are that gamers will be able to adjust the camera to give a greater field of view as best suits their playstyle. Please note that this feature is still in development and may change without further notice before the title update is released. They're also unlocking Ada Wong's campaign from the start of the game.
That's cool.
And have a player-controlled co-op partner added to that as well. So basically, in December, you'll get a potentially much better, much improved version of Resident Evil 6. And a no-hope mode, which is like a super high difficulty for, you know, crazy powerful zombs.
I mean, I'm glad that they're making the on-disc stuff that was, you know, outed beforehand as free DLC. You know, I'm glad that Capcom isn't redoing Street Fighter Cross Tekken.
You're visiting Street Fighter Cross Tekken?
But yeah, I mean, I think...
Have you looked at Warfighter multiplayer?
No, I haven't had a chance to do that yet.
I had a conversation with a friend last night. This was really interesting, and he is super... Like, he is the standing on top of the mountain shouting... I am the voice of dissent on Warfighter. Was totally into Warfighter, loving it. And I was like, wow, what, the single player, like, how do you get into that? It's like, I've heard like the first hour has more breaches in it than some...
birthing wings at the hospital, right?
You breach at least once per every level, and you can unlock new ways of breaching. So
This is kind of ridiculous, by the way. You were telling me that. So I finished this, because it's kind of ridiculous.
So I think there's 12 different ways you can breach, but at the beginning of the game, you only have one option, which is to kick the door down. But if you get 4 headshots, and there's always 4 bad guys when you breach a room. So
and it always goes into slow-mo.
Yeah, it always goes into slow-mo, and there's always 4 bad guys.
Well, that's a rule for terrorists, is that
you
always have your 3 buddies.
Have your 3 buddies in the hostage room.
Well, you know, everyone, all terrorists play Smash Brothers, you know? They're just playing 4-player Smash Brothers. And so when you get all 4 headshots, you unlock the next... way of breaching. So the next one I think is you get a axe and you axe the door handle off and then you kick the door in. Then after that,
You're literally, it's not new ways to deal with the 4 dudes, it's new ways to literally
new ways to break the door down.
After that you get a crowbar and you can hit the door.
That is exciting.
After that you get a shotgun so that you can shoot the doorknob and kick the door in.
Keep in mind they get increasingly less efficient ways to, because like the default way is you kick the fucking door down and run in. The next way is that you do something and then kick the door down.
Like the last one is this incredibly intricate Rube Goldberg machine. Like you have to tip the egg over, which hits the spoon, which smacks into the chicken, which walks across the room, and that would be amazing.
And the best part is like somehow you're supposed to be in this realistic fighter, right, or the realistic shooter, and yet the quartermaster is like, you want this crowbar? Go get me 4 more headshots.
4 more fucking headshots. Or until then, you're going to have to use your fucking boot.
Right. Until then.
Sorry, bro.
Boot for you. It's kind of a silly unlock thing. I was like, wow. You're really sold on your breach system if you like build it into like a reward loop for your game. Like,
I mean, I'm going to be so proud when I get the achievement for doing one of every kind of breach.
You get the David Copperfield unlock where you can just like walk through it. He just puts a sheet up and you walk through the door.
And they all look at you like, shit, how did you get in here?
Do that?
Bang, 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 bang. 4 headshots.
Unlocked Copperfield.
Oh, dear. So anyway, yeah, so he was super into it, and he was super into it because of the things that Andrew was talking about that you liked in the original game, which was the pace of it, the more realistic feel, and then coupled to that, he really liked the close quarter battle system. And that
sorry, I'm still tripping on this.
You're still with the breach.
The last one you get is a key.
A skeleton key.
Fucking key. Oh, just use the fucking key, bro.
But you still kick the door in.
I've had it all this time. I've had it all this time right here in my pocket, but I needed you to hit 48 headshots. Now that you have 48 headshots, here's the key.
Here's the fucking key, man. Just use that. Anyway, keep going. I'm sorry, Garnet, I interrupted you.
It would be really great if it was if one of them was a sonic screwdriver. Now that would be cool.
What's that? What's that buzzing noise?
Yeah, nothing. Let's keep playing Smash Brothers.
All right, enough of Warfighter.
Actually, there's one thing.
Let's dismiss Warfighter.
Wait, one more thing. One thing that I did. Another thing that I like. The driving. Really fun. First person driving feels really good.
Is there a lot of it?
At least the one mission that I played, it went on for a bit too long. It's like a 10-minute chase.
Wait, it's good, but it went on too long. That's not a good thing.
It's like sex.
That's also the best part of.
Andrew now completely understands the show. We have completely integrated him into the show.
I hope EA uses that for their box. Actually.
It's like sex.
It's like sex. It goes on just a little bit too long, and then it goes on for too long.
Are we still doing this?
All right, now we're done with Metal Hunter.
That's what she said.
Exactly.
All right.
She does say that.
Anyway.
Driving sequences in Resident Evil are awesome.
Which I think, actually, they probably... they have driving sequences? No. No. Do they?
There was a motorcycle chase that I found fun.
Remarking, though, remember that they did Need for Speed The Run, which was the ill-advised get-out-of-the-car movie, like, whatever game. But they did that on Frostbite. So I imagine they went to school a little bit on, you know, how do we adapt the engine to make it suited to a driving game. So having a driving segment in here actually kind of makes sense. Right. It's kind of benefiting from some of the development work they've done on prior games. So that's not unbelievable. I was thinking about this. Actually, I was thinking about it because someone brought it up in one of the forums or one of the comments I was reading about, one of the reviews or whatever. What if Medal of Honor hadn't gotten so in... What if the team or the creative force behind Medal of Honor hadn't fallen so in love with Call of Duty and when they had...
You think they fell in love with it or they were pressured? You think that the whole point of having... It's just, hey, there's a game that makes a shit ton of money. Sorry, go ahead. Sorry, you're right. I interrupted you.
It's okay.
I'll see myself out.
But I get what you're saying, is that like you feel like it was a corporate mandate.
I don't think they fell in love with it. I don't think they were like, ooh, this game is amazing.
They fell in love with the idea of how much money they could make.
Exactly.
Right. So what if, though, they had stuck to their guns?
And, good one.
And stayed in World War II. Because now there's nobody in World War II.
Which is a good thing. Thank God, World War II games
really
are over. Seriously.
Because aren't we saying that about
fatigue.
This era?
You know what's hilarious,
we've got
too.
Fatigue for this generation.
You know what's hilarious, too, is what a fucking fight Infinity Ward had trying to get out of World War II and bring it to the modern... And they were told no fucking way, and they... were proven right. Not everybody is in modern times,
right.
But they were fought tooth and nail on that decision.
Which I understand why they were probably fought, because I think there's, you know, a kind of a hesitancy to get involved in a war game that is so, like, almost could be a simulation.
Ripped from the headlines.
Right, it's something that's real, it's ongoing, that soldiers are actually giving their lives and dying in this exact moment, you know what I mean? Like,
I don't think that's why it was. I think it was because World War II games are making a shit ton of money right now, and let's make more of those. Well, why do you want to change things?
That's probably certainly, you know, part of the conversation, but I think that I just don't want to see games go back there, because I think what we're seeing with some of the new kinds of technology that's available and some of the cool stuff that they're going to show in Black Ops 2, like some of the little gadgets you can use and the different kinds of cool weaponry, you lose all of that cool high-tech gear aspect when you go back in time, when you go back to the 40s and you're trying to make it real, unless you're doing something completely high fantasy where it's like, oh, okay, let's bring these drones into World War II.
Sure, okay. So
you know what I mean?
I get it. You'd lose some of the high-tech gadgetry.
But you know what? I would love to see like a Frostbite 2-powered like 16-player online co-op World War II shooter where you're like you and like 15 other dudes are storming the beach, you know? Like, yeah. I would... There's like...
I don't know.
You
I feel like both of those things have been done too.
I think there's like new ways of approaching it, and we have this generation where we have all this new technology at our disposal, and designers haven't thought of new ways of approaching old material.
I think that what I was, as I'm starting to think about here, what I'm getting at is that maybe the problem is that anytime we're retreading, whether we're retreading modern era or retreading the World War II era, is that's where the trouble comes in, right? That was just
that
a
was
water
really
bottle.
Right into the mic.
Really?
That's how refreshing Arrowhead water is.
It's like when Mattis does his sound effect.
My apologies.
So the point, though, is that, you know, that's what happens when you start against retreads. Like, does anyone really want to go back and storm the beaches of Normandy again? No, probably not right now, because maybe a generation from now. Maybe there'll be a compelling reason to go back and do that. But we did it, and it was really good. I mean, I still very strongly remember the sequence of, like, that mirrored the beginning of Saving Private Ryan, where you're getting the boat and you're trying to get across the breach and you're getting to the point where they have the Jeffries tube and then you got to get up the hill. Yeah. Like, I still vividly remember that stuff because it was such a good part in such a memorable moment in gaming.
And it really happened and you didn't feel like a superhero. You didn't felt like one of many people in an impossible situation. I mean, that's really what the differentiator for World War II is, that those games weren't built to be, I mean, you did some things that were grandiose, but they weren't built like these games now where you are super soldier. They were built to be feel like history lesson is too strong of a term, but a little more verisimilitude, you know, a little bit attempt to feel like part of something larger rather than.
And I always liked that.
I did too.
I definitely liked that. So all that having been said, and this might rankle some folks, but I mean, this actually speaks to why I think that I've suddenly become even more excited for Black Ops 2, because while Black Ops and Black Ops 2 and Call of Duty in general is sort of thought to be the ones who keep retreading their own thing, it's like, yeah, they are in the realm of ridiculousness, but in the realm of ridiculousness, they don't seem to, at least, they don't retread the exact same steps they've done before. Right. And I think that maybe that's where Modern Warfare 3 went a little bit astray, was because they were carrying out the Modern Warfare storyline so far that you did start to feel like you were really walking in footfalls that you've done before. Right. You felt like you were like, oh, yeah, I've been down this. I know where I'm going. I know what this is all about.
I can't think of a
but I mean, here's
a job I would want less than like sitting down to make a new military shooter game.
Really? Because like, I think there are things. So look, although the emotional side of it didn't resonate the way it was hoped that it would. We talked about that with Corey here from what was the name of the
Spec Ops?
Right. Yeah, no, I know the game, but I was trying to think of the name of the development company that did it. Oh,
Jaeger,
right. From Jaeger. And like, though that part didn't connect with me, the experience of playing the game was still really unique. Like, here you are in Dubai, and it's been covered in sand, and you have like these really interesting, weird environments to traverse. So while it wasn't super high, artistic expression to me, which I think that they had tried to do, it was still, and I still enjoyed it. It was still interesting. I was in new environments. It was like doing something different. That to me, like, part of the problem with Warfighter is that it sounds like you're just like, you feeling like, oh, I'm in a version of a game that I played before. I'm in another version of a game that I played before. And you can go and do these things. And that's why, so then I'm looking at like the Black Ops stuff and just thinking about the one thing that Treyarch showed, which is that stupid because it's not stupid, but that big, crazy, ridiculous assault that goes through Los Angeles. The thing is, it is absolutely ridiculous and so incredibly over the top, but I would never, like it goes, it's just batshit insane.
Yeah, I mean, but
you're like,
it's
you're
that
flying
an
F-19, you're flying an X-35 through the middle of downtown Los Angeles, providing covering fire, and then you're like using a holographic sniper rifle to protect the president, and then you
like get into like a bodysuit where and you're like jetpacking around like Iron Man. It's like so bizarre.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. They could do that.
No, it's in the trailer. In the latest trailer.
Okay, see, so they can pull that shit because they can pull that shit off, and I think that that's like that speaks to like at least like in Treyarch's side, like that's cool. Like Black Ops was also like, I want to give them some credit, and I've given them some credit before. The whole Fight Club riff in Black Ops was cool. And there were people who were like really down on it at the time. They're like, oh, that's really stupid. I knew that was coming or whatever. Like, actually, no. You know what? They did a first person shooter where at the very end of it, they riffed on Fight Club and had like this really cool thing. And You know what? I'll admit it. I didn't actually see that coming. I mean, I figured he had gone and lost it. I knew there was something weird going on.
I mean, anything
Black Ops, dude. It's like 3 years ago.
Like any blockbuster major game, like that expensive and like, you know, that mainstream. Like for them to do anything experimental, that's like, you know, that
was kind of cool.
Yeah, that could potentially offend people. That's like, I'm glad that they did that, you know?
I think they had to do that. I think they needed to take, you know, the shooter genre and make it over the top and make it really gripping and like this like crazy action packed roller coaster ride. That's one of the reasons I really love the campaigns in Call of Duty, particularly, you know, Treyarch's work over Infinity Wards, but
I find them to be a little,
I know some people don't like that. I think some people
they are. No, you know what they are. So here's the thing: they are cacophonous
constantly, and it drowns itself out.
Don't disagree with you at all. And I think they could be. I think they could have been more delicate in storytelling if they had wanted to. But you're right; they want to make a cacophonous game, and so at the same time that they are thinking and doing creative things with where they're going with the story, they're still not relenting on this. We will always have the intensity level cranked all the way to maximum, and you will have no relief from it. And
that's
I've
gotten to the point. I enjoy those games. I like playing through them, but it's not the games that I would turn to in my, you know.
Trust me, I'm not. So I'm giving them credit. Don't overread what I'm saying. It's not The Unfinished Swan. It's not Eco. It's not Journey. I mean, this
sure,
is
of
not,
course not. Nobody's not, saying it is.
It's not even like approaching that within the context of making the big bombastic blockbuster. What separates them some is that they do, though, put some creative effort into it and take it to different places and have new experiences rather than just, I know how to build this adventure in this sand-swept town where there is a potential tango at the other. I'm trying to avoid
stay
out of stereotypes.
Yeah, I think it circles back to our pre-show conversation about guilty pleasures in movies. You know, no, like, I think there's like, I really loved G.I. Joe, which is a miserable movie.
That's a good guilty pleasure there. And that one fits the bill.
And the reason why I like that movie so much is because I think it felt like it was it knew how ridiculous it was. You know, it's like, well, we're going to have a space battle underwater, guys. Come on.
Of course.
Versus a movie like Transformers where, like, it's ridiculous, but, like, it's unaware of how ridiculous it is, you know? It takes itself very seriously, and like, that becomes difficult to watch, you know? And I feel like Treyarch, they do a really good job of like going over the top and like fully embracing, like fully understanding, like this is batshit crazy, you guys, and we're gonna run with it. I mean, the fact that they have zombies mode, you know, they like that ties into their like studio DNA because they're like, you know what, Call of Duty should be stupid. It should be stupid and fun, and we're gonna do everything we can. And I think. That's why I think fans are starting to like align a bit more closely with Treyarch than, you know, say Infinity War, because think about how serious the Modern Warfare franchise became, you know, like, you know, especially in 2 with the like No Russian level, you know.
People oftentimes take this show far too serious as well. So just keep in mind all of that before you start typing that forum post right now, because we read and we're sensitive. All right, we're halfway through, folks. We'll come back on the other side and continue this Weekend Confirmed. Very funky.
Amber is the color of her energy. Isn't that what it sounds like?
Was
amber is the color of my urine stream. That's my friend used to always say.
Wow.
So I guess since we promised at the beginning of the show that we would talk about it, and there is no better time because we were talking about it during the break than to discuss, because we were talking about serious business, clearly, like we were like right before we went to the break, games media, serious business, serious business. And this week there's been a bit of a brouhaha over the elder statesman, Mr. Jeff Keighley, and his appearance betwixt a pile of Doritos and a giant Halo Master Chief Mountain Dew standee. Now, I don't exactly know the circumstances. From what I've seen and gathered, I think this was a satellite hookup. And so these are pretty common. These do these satellite tours where you go into a television studio and you're set in a room and you're interviewed, you know, over and over and over and over and over for whatever subject it is. In this case, I believe it was for the VGAs. I believe this had to do with the VGAs.
Now, is this whole brouhaha just from the Eurogamer article, or was it happening already?
Well, I think it was starting to happen some. Obviously, if you're over on NeoGAF, there were people who were already like photoshopping Jeff into all kinds of funny situations. Like there was one, the one that was probably the most clever is a very like silver halide black and white style where they took this picture and they fixed it for perspective and put it inside a picture frame on a wall in a museum. Like a picture, the scene is these people in a museum gazing very thoughtfully at this picture inside a picture frame on the window on the wall, and the picture they're looking at is Jeff sitting in between the.
It's pretty clever.
It's very clever. It's like, I get it. They're critiquing the critic. Then what's going on there? But yeah, then it blew up because a editorial on Eurogamer went like really hardcore into, you know, this argument that games journalism is poison to the core because of the relationship between the advertisers and the marketers and PR and journalists and how close they are together. And, you know, so obviously you guys want to talk about this conversation. So this, for me, this is exactly why I always avoided using the word journalist.
Yeah, I think it's a misnomer.
I took journalism. There's some space for journalism in the video game world, but it's not really what the audience particularly wants.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly. Like that's not what people are.
Dean Takahashi reading. Does a great job being a games journalist.
Right.
And you know, Klepek used to do it a lot. I think that now he's moved on and does more like critical sort of stuff. And he's really interesting because that's what I want to see from him because he's a really interesting
guy. But the majority,
guy.
The 95% of what people are referring to online when they say games journalism is not.
It's not journalism.
And it's not, wasn't trying to be. It shouldn't be viewed in that prism. And if you are approaching it as a reader, expecting that from it, I think that's a mistake.
It's entertainment reporting. So you know, here's something that people take offense to right off the bat, because I heard you say it there, is that if you as a reader are approaching it, then people are going to say, well, that's what I want. I want games journalism.
Then you can find that. And that is certainly something that you can find. But don't look to Jeff Keighley for it. Don't look to, you know, that is not what his service is.
I mean, I really wonder if people on the American Idol forums get really angry at the terrible music journalism that Ryan Seacrest does.
Well, that's the thing, no, right? Seriously. We're talking about products. We're talking about an industry that's centered around selling products. And we, as people in the games media, get hands-on with these products, and we get these products for free to talk about them, because in order for us to, you know, be competitive within the industry, we need to get the games beforehand. The viewers want to know before the game's out. And I just like think this whole idea that, you know, that we shouldn't get stuff for free, or we this like payola system, like people believing that exists, is just such bullcocky, I tell you.
It's a very difficult subject to talk about because it's
not entirely bullcocky. I mean, there are established cases of marketing and money influencing
absolutely.
Editorial content. And, so it's not complete.
I'm saying it's not as widespread as people think it is.
Probably
not. Us talking about it, already we are the opposite of impartial. We are, you know, and it sounds defensive, and it sounds, I mean, what you just said, I think, can come off defensive.
Oh, absolutely.
And obviously we are in a position where we are sort of a cog in a machine. And I have very strong feelings that vacillate wildly between two points of view, because I get it. I get people wanting to be able to trust the people that they are reading or watching. Totally understand that. The only thing that I have to offer in what I do for a living is my opinion. And if my opinion is deemed to be invaluable, worthless,
colored.
Yes.
If it's then colored or tainted,
I no longer have that. Yeah. So I protect my opinion very strongly. I can only speak for myself. I protect my opinion. And I can understand how people can view something like that picture with Keely or other things that even I may say or others may say and make their own decision about whether or not they can trust my opinion. That is their prerogative.
Yeah.
And I feel that it is as much my responsibility as a consumer of things as it is as a critiquer of things to be informed and judicial about, you know, the kinds of things that I consume. So I truly believe that two things. First of all, I wish people cared this much about shit that really mattered.
Yeah, I mean, I
really do. I wish people were this passionate about this election that we're about to have.
In the middle of a political system season. Yeah, definitely.
But the B side is that I think that a lot of the hullabaloo and brouhaha it comes from a place of that it isn't really based in reality. I don't think anybody is truly shocked or even would go to Jeff Keighley for something that would be invalidated by that photo. Right? I think people are just pissed off that a guy who's very successful is successful in this way. Mm-hmm. You know, that you are able to be perceived as quote unquote selling out or whatever that is because he's sitting in front of products that paid him to sit in front of them.
Well, and Seacrest was a good example because in all deference to Jeff, you know, Jeff still does some cool insider stuff through the iPad apps that he makes, you know, like he did the behind the scenes stuff for Mass Effect. Those are cool, right?
The Final Hours, yeah.
Final Hours. So the Final Hours stuff like reflects what he did back in the day, because keep in mind this is a guy who like created his own website and then was working at GameSpot.
That's a fantastic article, that Final Hours article. It's wonderful.
And he has the ability to get that sort of access because of who he is.
Right.
However, his primary role today is he's a TV presenter.
Right.
He's a TV presenter. So the Ryan Seacrest analogy is pretty good. And as a TV presenter, you know, that then there's one layer. I personally probably wouldn't sit between. Actually, I don't know. Like it's just fucking Doritos. And the nice thing about this actually is it's not like he's sitting there with a copy of Darksiders 2 and Company of Heroes and saying, I love THQ. He's like sitting there with a bag of Doritos.
Also, he doesn't look enthused in that photo.
He's very steely-eyed.
Screen caps. You can't judge his facial expressions based off a screen cap as who's done lots of video and has seen lots of horrible thumbnails of myself on YouTube.
Story. The part of the story is that he looks hollow and like a shell of himself, and that's part of why photoshopping it into a museum is like, look, this hollow shell of a man in front of these things, and it's a poetic image.
Right. I just think that's people going a little too far with it. I think another thing that we probably should talk about is the other side of the article that Eurogamer opinion piece was talking about the relationship between people in the games media, reporters, journalists, presenters, whatever you want to call them, and the PR people.
I was going to go there.
Talking about like the GMAs and this idea, this tweeting contest they did to win a PS3. Is that ethical? Should people be doing that? No, they shouldn't. Oh, it doesn't matter. And I think that the idea that we should not have personal relationships with people in PR is, I think that's silly.
But personal relationships, do you have personal relationships where you get free PS3s?
No, that would be awesome. But no, I don't. And I always make it a point that if I have a personal relationship with someone at a particular PR company that's working on a particular title, that I'm not doing a review of that game. So I have personal relationships at specific companies with specific people But I'm not doing, I'm not putting a score on that game. Somebody else at the company is doing that.
I don't know. In a PR role, you know what?
That's noble. In a PR role, I don't even know how. Look, the, again, back to Jeff's point, like our opinions are all that we've ever had. So what I've always, my response, because I know, you know, I dance around this and don't, not dance around. I don't like to talk about this subject because I think that it's self-evident. You can look at anybody's work. Because anybody who's been doing this for any amount of time has a body of work. And you can say, yeah, they've been consistent with this, or this is who they are and this is what they talk about. Or, you know what? I don't think they were consistent about this. You know, just like we know that the Giant Bomb guys, there were a number of factors there. There were other things that played into it, but there was some serious pressure put on them in an editorial way, and they decided to go do something else. And right. So we know that they have integrity. But that doesn't mean that, like, look, Giant Bomb's still a site that has advertising, and they still have relationships with PR. And it's because, at the end of the day, you know, if you're out there listening to this show and you read websites and you're interested in gaming, you want to see what's coming. You've been the 3 million of you pre-ordered Assassin's Creed 3. So obviously there's a lot of you who are excited about Assassin's Creed 3. You've wanted to know about it to a degree. You wanted to see something about, like, what's going to come in the game. Like, what does the game look like? Give me some opinions of it. In order for you to have those things, some of us have to be in relationships with the press teams that put those tours together so we can go and see them and then come and tell you about it. And then it's up to us. You know, do we just sit there and drivel out the fact sheet that was spoon-fed to us? Or do we actually give you our opinion? And I can certainly well sympathize how it seems like if I was sitting there listening and be like, yeah, you know, you're out there and you went to Boston and you had this major trip to Boston so you could see Assassin's Creed 3 and you had got to have this, like, nice dinner and you got to go around and see historical sites. And so, yeah, when it came to talking about Assassin's Creed 3, I bet you said something really nice about the game. And I don't know how much that applies to other people. I can tell you that I didn't go on that trip, so I can't really comment specifically to that trip. But had I gone on that trip, I can tell you one thing is that, A, it's a lot of work because you do have to still, like, get your pieces done. Mm-hmm. You have to get in on deadline. And you always know that yeah, you're enthusiastic about what's going on, but at the same time, you're especially, look, even if you've only done this like a few months, you very quickly start to attune yourself to PR speak, like when they're messaging you, like what sort of messaging they're doing. And I'll be honest, like, you pretty quickly, even after that, start to just tune that shit out. It's like you get to the point where you're almost in your mind developing the bullet points that would be on the one sheet that's going to come out in the email afterwards, because you're just wanting to make sure you have your facts right so that when you talk about something, you call it the right thing. Like whatever the widget might be in the game, you want to make sure you call it the name that the game is using, because that's important. But other than that, you're like not even paying attention anymore. Yeah. What?
I mean, I think we're so inside baseball right now.
People wanted us to talk about it, so I'm talking about it. So.
No, I hear you. I honestly, as I said, I vacillate wildly in what I think about this because I understand people's position in wanting to be able to trust the people that they read or watch. But on the other hand, I honestly, in trying to think about this as objectively as I am able, I really don't know what people want from the articles they read or the videos they watch, because it doesn't seem to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it doesn't seem to me that they are looking for buyer's guide advice. It doesn't seem that people are going to Garnet Lee and going, I want to know if I should buy this or not. Garnet, tell me. I think that the mass of media covering these kinds of things right now, anybody that cares a whit about Assassin's Creed 3, for example, has so many options of ways to get information about that to make an informed buying decision, that one voice influenced a degree or not a degree, I don't think that even moves the scale. And I don't – so in one sense, I don't even understand the practical uproar about this. I understand the conceptual uproar. The idea of it is offensive, and the idea of it is problematic. But in actuality, in practicality, I don't understand like what people want.
I disagree. I think I'm going to disagree with you. I think that you are underestimating the pull of certain outlets and the pull of certain personalities at specific outlets. And I mean, just from myself working at a couple of different outlets over the last couple of years and seeing the fan reactions in the comments on the videos and in threads and things like that. I mean, you see people engaging in a way that's like, oh, great review. I'm going to buy this now. Or, oh man, you're giving me second thoughts. You know, I'm not necessarily saying that everybody has like that one destination that they use as like the metric or a baseline for opinion, but that does exist. I mean, I feel like it's,
but don't you think
it's not like a small thing? I think
don't
people
you think they develop that relationship based on a series of interactions that is exactly what Garnett referred to, which is you get whether or not someone is being up front with you on stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And like I'm saying, I care very much about my opinion and you know, I protect it. And I think that I hope that the people who listen to me for those kinds of things recognize that. And I think that I recognize it in other things that I watch. So it's not, I just don't think it's so obscure. What, you know, it's not obscured from the viewer as to whether or not your opinion is consistent. You know, if I tell you three things are awesome and they turn out to be shitty, you're not going to believe me anymore.
Right.
You know what I mean? So
unless we already know that our tastes don't align.
Right.
And then I know automatically, well, you said that was awesome, so I know that's going to be shitty because right. I don't agree with you, Kanata.
Yeah.
You're nuts. You know, I think that the other thing is, so I think that you're like, what do people want? Well, I think that, like you said, conceptually in this ideal world, they would like us to be in a situation where there was a way that we could have Assassin's Creed 3 and play it without ever having had to be, you know, influenced at all by no PR person gave it to us. We just got it.
Mm-hmm.
We, for all intents and purposes, stole it out of some place and now have it in a vacuum where we did not receive, you know, any material access or there was no like, here's a list of things that are new features in the game and or no messaging, none of that kind of stuff, and just sort of came to it as a gamer does, because that is the way a gamer comes
to it. A gamer doesn't approach it like that. A gamer has read, you know, thousands of, you know, articles about Assassin's Creed 3.
I was still in my conceptual world. I was in my conceptual world where they're imagining themselves that I don't have that access. I didn't go to Boston. I didn't get those things.
Okay, someone without internet that somehow has an HDTV, a PS3, and a copy of Assassin's Creed.
I'm saying
3
we were talking the conceptual world, yeah. And then that, like you said, that ignores the practical. And then imagine this. Imagine if there wasn't a PR layer, you'd still have that relationship thing, because what we're talking about is stuff that is really subjective. So even where they're not PR, in covering Mass Effect over the years, I've gotten to know Casey Hudson. Casey Hudson's a cool guy. I've enjoyed talking to him, and I've bought into a lot of the stuff that he talks about. I haven't always thought he was successful. I've talked at times about the things that I didn't like in Mass Effect. I've talked to him about those things as well. But at the end of the day, if you're reading that and you've read all this stuff and you know that I've gotten to know Casey Hudson, you're either going to have to decide for yourself, like, oh, Garnett's just selling me this shit because he's buddies with Casey. Or, you know what? Garnett knows Casey and he's talked to this guy a bunch of times and he's had some insight that's actually valuable. And you got to decide that for yourself.
And the other thing, which is a whole other side of it, is that in order to do what we do, which is very difficult to make any money at all, let's be honest, you need people to give you money.
You got to go for advertising.
You have to go.
Yeah, we have to be. It's like we have to read ads in the show.
Because everyone listening to this, we very much know you don't want to pay for it. You don't want to pay to download this show.
So the funny thing is, there'll be people right now who are right now typing a post to be, oh, I'd pay for the show.
Well, I think that we all know that free has become the only accepted cost for stuff on the internet. And
But I think, you know, as content creators, you also want to reach the broadest audience possible.
Sure.
You know, there is that trade-off. You know, maybe you'll make more money if you did have a paywall, but at the same time, like, don't you want to...
But look, from a media standpoint, like, I'm excited when we have sponsors like we have today, Shutterstock.com and Hover.com, okay? Not games, right. Not even really game-related, like, totally non-endemic stuff, and that's fine. I have no problem, like, it's not... Right. There's, like, not even any question of, of whether or not there's some crossover between what we're covering, like, and but it's not always service and an image service,
right? And we're very fortunate on the show that we have that, but it's very difficult to have a show that's focused on a very specific audience, i.e., people who love video games, to go. Well, we can't. The people that most want to talk to that audience are people who sell video games. So those
well,
people,
let's not lie. We would take those ads if they were there. I wouldn't read them. I mean, we would have them done. We would have, you know, they would have to submit their own creative or whatever. We wouldn't do personal stuff.
It's just it's a very difficult thing to be involved in, because you have this thing that you've got an audience that is a very specific audience, and there's very specific people that want to sell to that audience, and you're trying to avoid getting the money from those people to keep making the thing that gets to that audience. So it's difficult all the way around, and at a certain point, I mean, we're very fortunate on TRS too that we get sponsors that I genuinely like and use, and we're so lucky. But sometimes, you know, you can't choose. You know, you're trying to create a product, and you're trying to be able to live.
I was trying to think of something awful, but I couldn't think of what it would be. What would an awful sponsor be?
Well, let's not. I don't think we need to delve into that territory. I don't need to throw anybody under the bus. But I wanted to ask you, like,
if Viagra came to sponsor our show, I mean, it would be hard.
Wrong audience, right? Like,
right. Yeah, but that's why I'm trying.
I mean,
to
but
come up
did
with
pe- are people like crucifying Keeley for having Doritos and you know, Mountain Dew as sponsors? Like, I don't understand. Like, those are like key things for this demo. I love Doritos. Like, I don't care that he has those in the shot. Like, I just
I think that's, I mean, that's part of what the shot is, A, and B, what that article was, you know, him kind of touting, like, well, what a perfect relationship between Halo and Mountain Dew and Doritos, yada yada yada.
It is. Like, that's their audience. The young male, the 18 to 35 male, who is the primary demo for video games, like, that those are two key products that that demographic enjoys.
I like Halo 4 and I don't like Mountain Dew. Granted, the first time I had Mountain Dew was when Microsoft sent us that case of Mountain Dew.
Wow. If that wasn't ever the most perfect framing of the first time I ever had Mountain Dew was when Microsoft sent it to us.
Was it one of the colored ones?
We just lost all credibility.
Yeah, I'm like, all right, you know what? It's finally in front of me. Let me try this. I'm like, oh God, what is this? Like, I felt terrible afterwards, too.
Well, a lot of Americans grew up with Mountain Dew.
Dude, Mountain Dew and Red Vines.
I'm telling you, Mountain Dew is one of those things. It's an American culture thing. Like, and please, in the comments, let me know if you agree. Like,
what?
It's you know, it's actually iconic of that demo. It
dude, I could pound, like, a half of one of those tubs of Red Vines and a couple of Mountain Dews and
I'm
be, like, good
actually
for a night.
Feeling physically ill by... Yeah, actually, the product name makes no sense. Mountain Dew. If you just think about the words mountain,
it's the lovely dew on the leaves
makes
of
you
the
think,
trees.
It
the
makes
mountains.
You think of, like, you know, bottled water or downy, like, you know, like
downy
dryer
fabric.
Sheets.
All right. Look, you know what? By the way,
it's
we've bored everybody.
We've decided to feed cows now.
So last week, the other thing that you guys promised to talk about that you didn't get to was mouse versus keyboard.
Oh yeah,
another favorite topic of the internet, which came up because 2 weeks ago, last show I was on. When Kiefer was here, I said something about playing with my Xbox controller hooked to my computer, and he very indignantly told me that it's blasphemy.
He's a PC snob.
Blasphemy. It was funny because he's really not. Well, maybe he is just that. Maybe he's just naturally a PC snob. But it's funny, like, that snobber used to be around, and I was thinking about this subject, and it occurs to me that potentially one of the things that has to be most frustrating for that core group of PC gamers is the reason this debate used to be much more vocal than it is now.
And it used to be much more the other side than it is now. Have you noticed how many
people
arguing?
Did chime in for controller?
Never used to be the case.
Oh, never used to be that way. And I think
that's a generational thing.
Generational, and then also change in times, and also dramatic improvement in controller interface and implementation.
Sure.
And
but also just game design.
Design.
For sure. Yeah. Games are designed for consoles.
Yeah, games are designed to take advantage of these controllers, and once the interface is made for controller, all of a sudden, keyboard and mouse doesn't feel as great.
But if you're a disciple of keyboard and mouse, you kind of have to feel like the apocalypse you saw coming years ago came to be at pass, which is that we talked about game design and those things, and I think that was one of the things that they most dread, was that here in the mouse and the keyboard, you had a highly precise input system, and you still had games that were tailored around that highly precise input system. And game design has shifted, and that highly precise input system is sort of wasted now at times because they're tuned for controllers. And that was like the apocalypse. And if you are a mouse and keyboard defendant, you're probably pretty pissed off about that. And I get that. I can understand that.
Yeah.
You got a 4,000 DPI mouse. You got a, you know, a no duplicate, you know, the keyboard where you can like have multiple keys down. It doesn't cause a crash. Like you're like ready to freaking rock and roll. And there's no more Quake 3. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like Quake 3 was the game that like responded to that. Like you had to have that. And there isn't that game anymore. Even, you know, like even if you go into shooters like Rage or whatever, it's like you still just, yeah, it'll play a little better with mouse and keyboard, but the controller is so there because it's no longer tuned.
I mean, game design is completely different for first-person shooters now. The reticule is, you know, instead of being a precise dot, it's a circle. It's a range, you know.
We will deliver a bullet somewhere within the circle in the next millisecond.
And, you know, that's because it's accommodating the controller, you know, the analog stick. And game design has really sort of taken advantage of that intentional inaccuracy, I guess. I don't know.
And so you guys are you guys all happy? I mean, I'm assuming that you guys are all controller.
Well, yeah. I'm a big console player. I'm a Mac person, so I'm not like huge into PC gaming.
She doesn't even know what right clicking is.
you shut up. I just don't play on, like, because there's some PCs at work, and I had a PC at my, you know, my last job, so I would play occasionally. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I'm still saving money to buy my future gaming PC, which I'm planning to do.
You should get some of that sweet Mountain Dew money.
I know, right? I'm going to try. But I think that, you know, the reason why the game design change happened was because, you know, developers are realizing, hey, like, if we don't make this available on console, we're really limiting our sales base. Which, you know, a lot of, you know, consoles have really dramatically increased sales. You know, multi-platform games sell more.
Well, and even as Steam has followed it with Big Picture Mode, mm-hmm. gaming has very much moved to the couch. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because that conversation about seating and stuff came up. I still will very much enjoy going over to the computer desk and like having a like intimate experience with my computer. It's nice. Like, if you sit down, the screen's like right there. Nice too. Put on the headphones.
I think lots of guys have intimate experiences with their computers.
I used to be a big keyboard and mouse guy because I used to be a UT 2K4 player. That was, like, that was my jam. And I remember I think it was at a E3, I think they were showing off one, like, first-person shooter, and I was using keyboard and mouse. I'm like, oh my god, I don't know how to do this anymore. Like, it was so weird to me. I'm like, mm-hmm. why is control so far away? Why do I have to use that to crouch? Why do I have to...
You know what pisses me off is that I'm left-handed, and fucking WASD is the bane of my existence. Because there's perfectly good fucking arrow keys on the right.
I agree with you. I'm left-handed too.
They used to always be used. It is such a pain in the ass to remap all the keys to the right. I use P and semicolon and, you know, over there. But half the times those are mapped to other things in the game. And more often than it should be the case, even when you remap the keys, the in-game tutorial doesn't recognize that you've remapped them, so it'll still tell you, just push F, dude. And I'm like, fucking F doesn't do that anymore, asshole.
I changed it to enter. The best is when you play like a PS3 debug game or something like that, and it still has Xbox buttons to show up. Yeah. That's the greatest.
All right, guys, stick around. We will be back to wrap things up. We have Forza Horizon still ahead of us, and I don't know what else we got. We got some user stuff down in here. We did controller versus mice. I don't know.
I have a game that I might like to talk about if you guys are interested called Marvel Heroes.
Sure, we can do that too. All right, so there you go. We'll be back to wrap it up on the other side of this break. Different music. Now I feel unbridled now that we're embracing music.
Embrace it.
Embracing music. So I embraced Forza Horizon when I saw it at a demo event about a month ago.
Yeah.
And I was I was really taken by it. I played, they just said, here, sit down and play it. They let us play the first hour of the game, and actually first couple of hours. We were able to play for a while, and I had a good time with it, and I was really enthusiastic about it. And so I was really looking forward to getting the retail copy. And I got the retail copy, and I feel very bad having to reverse my position so much on this game.
Ruh-roh.
I'm just not feeling it now that I'm actually spending like legit time with it, you know,
Ruh-roh. So
like probably a dozen, 15 hours into it.
There's a lot of good buzz for this game.
There is a lot of good buzz for this game. And I think that there are some things to enjoy about. So here's one of the things the game does really, really well. Forza Horizon is a offshoot that's being done in Europe. It was done in the UK, actually, by a bunch of folks who had worked on Project Gotham and had come out of Climax and other racing studios around there. That, you know,
good pedigree.
Great pedigree working on it, right? And the thing that they got the very most right about this game is that the lay of the land, it's supposed to be a scaled down version of areas of Colorado that you're blasting around, has fantastically awesome roads to drive down. They have these, I mean, if you ever had that dream, like the old test drive, like the original test drive back on PC in like 1990, whatever the hell it was, like, here's a Porsche and go drive down a freaking country road at some insane amount of speed. They got that right because the roads have, they're not bone straight or board straight, but they're like, they just have a nice curve to them, and then they have a little, few tighter curves and stuff, but they feel very natural. You get a really cool sense driving around Colorado that you're driving around the countryside of Colorado.
Hmm.
That's all really fun. What strikes me, and I don't know if I was just, maybe they have Microsoft Kool-Aid. Maybe when I went to the event, I drank Microsoft Kool-Aid and didn't even realize it. Although I don't even remember drinking it. It was like in the middle of the morning. That game, when I played it there, I felt like I immediately was in sync with the cars and having a good time driving them. And I cannot for the life of me enjoy driving the cars in this game. They don't feel right to me. They just, blasting down the highway is fun enough, but as soon as any sort of steering input comes into the game, it just doesn't feel right. It feels like.
So the solution is don't steer.
Yes, the solution is don't steer. Just put the accelerator down to the ground and floor it. I think the problem is this, is that you're driving, and you know they have a series of regular cars, right? But you very quickly ramp up into some like really cool, crazy cars. You know, of course, ultimately, of course, there's a Bugatti Veyron in there, but there's like an FSX, there's like great Ferraris, there's all kinds of great cars in there. And the game does not give me any sense of where the limit of traction is, and that really, really kills it for me. So what I mean by that is that I'm driving the car really fast, and I'm, for one thing, having to frequently look at the speedometer to know how fast I'm going, and then mentally in my head start thinking, okay, I need to get down to, you know, 65 miles an hour before I can even start to try and enter this curve because I'll lose control. And that's not a driving game. A driving game, it should be, especially in this sort of casual, like driving out on the, like, and by casual, I mean not a hardcore road race.
Yeah, isn't this much more of an arcade? Or it's
supposed to be an arcade, right?
Yeah.
I should be just like driving down the road and be able to like feel, oh, I need to slow down some here, you know, or I need to like, and it just doesn't communicate that feel to me. And to make matters worse, once you lose traction in this game, it's as if your car suddenly has the weight of a feather and is sliding on top of glass that's been coated in oil.
Oh.
It's bizarre. It's really, really strange. You completely lose control. You're like sliding completely out of control. There's no sense of weight. There's no sense of getting, you know, back to a spot where you can recover. It's just, it's crippling. Like I just don't even know if I'm going to spend any more time with it because it's really frustrating.
So,
and it had so much potential.
Is it an open world game or no? Is it set tracks?
So there's another thing, is that the design of the game, when they turned us loose with it to play the first couple of hours, we had single player to play with, and it was offline, and we were on debug kits, and you know, I'm like, oh, but this is going to be like, you know, an open world game. No. It's as if this game was made 3 or 4 years ago. The single player experience is separated out. Now, granted, it does have inlaid challenges for your friends. So, I mean, it's aware of what your friends are doing in the game. So,
got an Autolog-esque. very situation.
It's basically an Autolog deal, right? Where they have their speed trap cameras, and you go through a speed trap camera, and it shows you how you did against your rival. And when you like race down a road, it's like your rival is this far ahead of you. Like everyone's a rival, of course, and it does all that, except that that experience is still completely isolated in a single player world. And when you go to play multiplayer, now there is a free roam way to that you can play multiplayer in free roam, but that's not the way it comes up. When you go to play multiplayer, the first thing it does is it starts feeding you playlists of races.
Well, that's cool. That's kind of what Need for Speed does now. This most coming up one, Most Wanted.
Except that Most Wanted does it within the world. This is completely abstracted.
It's just in a menu system?
Yes. It's like you're playing Call of Duty. It's like you're playing. It's like you go in.
You do a race, and then you go back out to the menu, and you go do another race, and you go back to the
exactly.
menu.
Exactly. And it just drops you into the race somewhere in the countryside. You go run the race, and you jump back out. And it has like, and it does.
That's a bummer.
If the race system were additive to having a cool open world racing, driving around, meeting people and running against them kind of thing, that would be great. But as it is, it's the primary mode. It's the main thing is you jump in, you say, you know, for your first seven levels, you're beginner, and it puts you in like a beginner mosh pit and it picks races for you. And well, actually everyone votes for what car class they want to race. Mm-hmm. And then it picks the, you know, the class based on who won the votes. And then it puts you in a random race and says, okay, guys, go race. And you go race and you come back and it's like, oh, here's another race. Now we're going to spin this course. What class would you guys like to vote for? And you vote for, and so it very much has that sort. Actually, it's very Halo-like in the feel,
yeah.
Right, like you're like feel like you're in mosh pit, and it feels like I left that era of racing games for open world games behind like three or four titles ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, that feels like I forgot.
Feels a little antiquated,
very antiquated.
Yeah.
I mean, especially makes you appreciate like how good Test Drive Unlimited and Test Drive Unlimited 2 were, which were great, grossly underrated for what they did. Although they were also crippled by their handling model for me. I mean, they didn't drive as well as I wanted them to drive.
But does this game feel more like an arcade racer? Are you crashing? Are you doing?
You crash all the time, obviously. The other thing about their online code is, and I'm sure that they have some optimizations that they can do. Their online code right now is, at least my experience in Knights of Racing has been pretty inconsistent. Like a lot of jittery, a lot of cars like in front of you, and then juking a little bit to the left, and juking a little to the right, and jittering and hopping around.
Weird. It doesn't feel like Forza though.
It feels like they're almost trying to compete with Need for Speed in a year where Need for Speed looks really, really awesome.
This is absolutely a Blur split second sort of repeat where you've got two games that are in the very same sort of space. Although the outdoor, like, I don't know. I haven't had a chance to play enough Most Wanted. I mean, I've only seen the urban.
Really good.
But is it all urban?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the thing about this is that
it's like Burnout Paradise where there's like the outskirts of town that you can go through, like farm country.
There's some really cool, amazing out in the middle of the Colorado countryside driving in this game.
Cool.
That's really, really cool.
Is it
cool.
Like mountain passes and stuff?
Mountain passes, big cool. Open fields. And then they have like little towns that you go through. So
yeah, I think it's rad.
That part's really cool. And then the whole conceit for the game is a little heavy-handed. I mean, I think they're like a little caught up too much in the culture thing. I mean, you know, like the whole story of Forza Horizon is that you're in Colorado for the Horizon Festival. Ooh. Which is this like EDM music fest plus car craziness and ripped.
Is that a real thing?
No.
Oh.
It's totally fake. And ripped entirely from Need for Speed is this idea that once you get onto the festival, there are 250 racers and you're trying to earn points to be moving up the stack to be, you know, better than the next racer and better than the next racer and better than the next racer.
It's pretty standard.
I just, man, the handling, I just can't. And other folks have talked about this, and I've tried stuff like turning off the assist. I actually found that turning off the assists made the driving feel better. It's almost as if the assists are so heavily boosted to make it arcade-like that it like numbs out the whole thing.
Now, do you think someone like me, who's less of a car guy and just kind of wants to hop in and have a good time, would be able to put that aside and not notice it so much? Or do you think it's just sort of bad for everybody?
I think that what would happen is you'd be initially taken by its blush because it is fun to go out and drive around. And if you were interested in just going and driving around, that would be great. But it endeavors to keep you in the game loop of going to the next event and going to the next event and going to the next event. And the events then they're just not as good. Mm. Like the event driving is not as good as the free driving. The free driving is really fun.
Are you ever doing anything other than race? Are you doing jumping or anything like that?
No, although a bunch of these guys did work on like dirt games, and so there's a tremendous amount of off-road as well as on-road racing, and of course it's Colorado, so there's a lot of dirt track and all that kind of stuff. And
I just know how arcade it gets, you know, because Need for Speed, events are really crazy, weird. You have to.
It is not arcade like that. Yeah. It is not arcade like that. It is purely racing, and I don't know. Maybe that's. I don't think that's to his detriment. I mean, there's other little fun things to do in the game. I talked before about the barn finds, which are kind of cool. You're out driving around the countryside, and you can find old, really cool cars that are hidden inside barns, which like plays back to this idea of like being an antique car hunter and
barn finds. Yeah, that's in Need for Speed as well.
Is it really?
Yeah, that's how you get new cars in Most Wanted now. Is that you find them? You have to drive up to them. Sometimes you'll see them far from a distance. You don't know how to get to them. It's awesome. It's really cool.
I think I'm really going to like Most Wanted better. And I think it's because though they want Most Wanted, I think, wants you to feel like you're driving a really fast car, but be on the edge of control of it.
Yeah.
And Forza Horizon, because it still has the Forza engine under the hood, wants to be a sim and then figure out how to put enough assists on top of it that you can handle driving that car.
Hmm.
And I still don't understand the weird feelings that it gets when it breaks loose. It really just doesn't feel right. It really, really doesn't feel right. Which is a shame, because they do some other creative things that are fun. Like they do like these weird creative races. The first one you get, so I won't be a spoiler. There are others that are similar to this that I've hit already. But the first one you get is you race down a mountain pass, like you thought would be cool, against a P-51 Mustang airplane.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so you're on this twisty, curvy road, right? And the gates that you have to pass through for the time gates are arranged on the curves. So the airplane can't turn fast enough, so it has to fly through a gate and then go out and circle around and come back and then fly through the gate.
See, that's cool. That's really clever.
And it's really clever, and it's really fun.
Something you've never done before in a game, too.
It's pretty fun.
Yeah.
It's pretty fun. They iterate on that idea some other times, which that's pretty fun.
Yeah.
So, but what you're saying is that a lot of these ideas are kind of frustrating because you want to have fun doing them, but basic handling issues are preventing you from having as much fun
as you. Test Drive Unlimited 2 all over again, yep.
That's a bummer.
It is totally a bummer. It is really a bummer.
Do you think it can be fixed with a patch?
I honestly have no
Do you care
idea.
For it to be fixed, or are you like on to the next?
I would spend much more time with it if I was enjoying driving the game more. As it stands at like 12-something hours into it, I'm probably to the point where I'm like, you know what? Most Wanted's out next week. Got it pre-ordered. Going to get it right away first day. I'm going to hop right in. Like, it's going to like, you know.
And that game is...
Amazon's going to show up and I'm going to be like, day one. And then I'm going to start playing it. And I've already played that game. And I know that one of the things that Burnout did really well is that, like, you get into trouble in Burnout... or in Hot Pursuit, which was also done by Criterion.
Yeah.
And, like, yeah, they let you do shit that a car would never do, but they let you do it because it feels freaking good to be, like, almost out of control in a corner and give the car a little more gas and have it, like, sit down and go through a freaking ridiculously awesome power slide than it does for the car to break loose and skid out of control into the wall and smack and crash.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree. And that's something I really loved about the Burnout series is that it was fun because I wanted to do takedowns, you know, like I wanted to like have these crazy crashes and do things because that's the fun of an arcade racing game for me. Like I've never personally been into simulation racing games. I understand why people like them. It's just not for me. And like, it's been a while since I've really devoted a lot of hours into a racing game. And I used to play racing games until like my thumbs would bleed, and I think Need for Speed Most Wanted, and you know, this new one is probably the first racing game I've seen in the last like 3 to 5 years that I'm really, really excited about.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that next week. And the thing about, just to wrap this up, is like we talked about at the beginning, like there are so many weird things about Horizon that feel out of date, antiquated. The free roam piece, which when you're in Most Wanted, you're always basically in free roam because everyone's driving around the city together and then events process and you go and play them. The free roam mode in Horizon reminds me of, if anything, reminds me of all the way back to Midtown Madness. Remember Midtown Madness?
Oh, yeah.
When you would like hop in with your, you like had to set up games and then like figure out getting all together and then you'd hop in and you'd decide to play like cat and mouse or something like that. That's like what Forza Horizon's multiplayer feels like. I'm like, wow, this is like, it's like you guys haven't learned from all the stuff that's happened in the last 5 years. It's bizarre. It's bizarre. Andrew, you played a superhero game that has learned from one of the oldest fantasy games.
I'm so excited about this.
I know.
Ever.
So I was at New York Comic Con, and I got to sit down with David Brevik, who you guys know from Diablo and Diablo 2 primarily, and learn about Gazillion's upcoming free-to-play action RPG / MMO hybrid game called Marvel Heroes. Now, I'd heard a little bit about the game. I didn't really know much about it. I hadn't really seen anything. But I was like, well, you know, it's got a pedigree behind it. And it's Marvel, which is, you know, a great, you know, library of IPs within Marvel, the Marvel world. So I was like, let's try this out and see how it is. And I did like a extensive, like 20 to 30 minute hands-on demo, and then they walked me through a bunch of stuff. So basically, the one line description I'm giving everybody for this game is Marvel Diablo with 25 of your friends. It's like
25.
Well, there's more than that. And I mean, but like most of the main, you know, like group quests, if you will, are like with like 20 to 50 people, depending.
That's awesome.
So basically, it's top down like Diablo, and it's point and click. Exactly like Diablo. You click your way for movement, you click to pick up items, you click
to
fight.
You're playing as actual Marvel heroes, not like the character you created.
It's not like DCUO, where you are creating your own custom hero. You are the actual bona fide heroes of the Marvel universe. And what David told me is the reason why they wanted to go with that, and the reason why they're not allowing you to, you know, customize the abilities of the heroes, is because he said that they wanted to create a game with characters that had backstories, with characters that you know and that you love, that you've read about.
That's what I want to play when I play a Marvel game. Right. I don't want to fucking play, like, Captain Analog. I want to play Captain America.
Yeah, exactly. And he said that they felt really strongly about that, so they've really preserved the characters in their true comic book forms. You can get alternate costumes. Like, many of the characters have alternate costumes.
Ooh.
And then, so as far as, like...
the agent.
But, Jeff, yes. What about Raptor Man?
Raptor Man lives on somewhere on some server somewhere. He sits dormant waiting for the day when he'll be needed again.
What about Raptor Man?
So,
I have one other question to interrupt.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
Okay.
25 of your friends, are there going to be like 15 Spider-Mans? Or is it
you can make you? Yeah, you can make a group with all of the same character.
Less excited about
that. Well, I mean, it depends how you want to play, right? Do you want to have like a guild of all Wolverines? That could be kind of cool if you're all spec'd out differently, you know, depending on what items that you have. And that was one of the things I asked him about. I go, well, okay, so if you're preserving, you know, these Marvel heroes the way that they are, how is your item system going to work? And when we chatted, he told me that they're on their 7th iteration of the item system with the dropping.
Ruh-roh.
And when you're playing, no, he said that they finally found something that they're really happy with. And when you're playing with a group of people, loot that drops is just for you. No one else in your party can pick it up, and it's customized based
Diablo
on your
3.
Character. I mean, it and it is randomized loot as well. And what it will be is, like, for example, if you're playing a Storm, different kinds of capes will drop, and the different capes will add different stat bonuses, things like that, different pants for the Hulk.
Are they going to have visual differences
different
too?
Different pants.
Yeah. No, I don't think, no, the visual, well, actually.
I'm sure they will.
Yes.
Dave would not make,
now that I think about it, yes,
designs.
But I mean, they also have, you know, these full costumes that are interchangeable on the fly, like with a click, you can go into your character screen and change them out. And there's iconic villains. I mean, the main through story arc is against a plot involving Doctor Doom. And he said there will be an end game. They're not obviously talking about it yet because they haven't even entered closed beta yet. But they are doing closed beta signups on the website if you guys are interested in jumping into it. But it looks really fun. I mean, imagine Diablo with all of the awesome Marvel heroes.
I've done nothing but imagine that my whole childhood.
So I got really, really excited. And one of the most exciting things about this game is that it's going to be free to play, which is, you know, this model that we're seeing really spreading heavily across the gaming industry right now. And I talked to them. I was like, okay, so what are you going to pay for? Because clearly all free-to-play games have stuff that you pay for. That's how you guys make your money back. And he said, we, you know, aren't quite, you know, sure about what we're going to. I mean, they are, but he just wasn't. Yeah. He just wasn't disclosing exactly. to me.
We don't know how we're gonna make money on this.
Well, you know what he told me was really interesting is he said that he's been and he says he struggles with the financial guys all the time because he really just wants to make a great game and give it away for free so as many people as possible can play. Which I can.
He's a humanitarian.
Which I can respect from a content creator standpoint, as Andrew was talking about earlier. You want that reach, and the easiest way to get the reach is to make it free, and that's why free to play has been so.
Can I make a prediction?
Yes, of course.
The game is going to ship with 10 characters, and if you want to play as...
It ships with over 20, actually.
Okay, well, if you want to play as 30, 40, 50 other ones...
Right, you're probably going to have to pay for them, but they said that you will absolutely not pay for performance, and that was like the exact quote they said. You will not pay for performance in this game, but again, they weren't talking about exactly what you are paying for. Right. I'm thinking it, maybe it's costumes, maybe it's characters.
It's definitely costumes and it's definitely characters.
Maybe it's special areas. I mean, there's instanced areas. And then I asked him about PvP, and he said that they're not talking about PvP yet. They haven't decided if they're going to do PvP. Hmm. I also asked him, well, what about Mac? Are you guys going to eventually extend this to Mac beyond PC? And he's like, well, I'm a Mac owner. I would love to see this on Mac. And I was like, I don't know. Is that a hint that, yes, someday it's going to be on Mac? Or is that you just saying that, yeah, it would be nice, but no, it's not. So I didn't know which way to interpret that. But
can you play as villains?
As of right now, no, because it's Marvel Heroes. Hmm. You would play against the villains, though, right. Like all the...
I'm sure you can pay a little extra, and they'll give you a little...
it's possible.
Little Dr. Octopus on the side.
But they showcase some of the characters, and they just look great.
Hit me with some names.
Ms.
All the
Marvel.
Avengers. Ms. Marvel.
Yes, she looked great. Her flying, the animation she does when she flies was pretty cool. Hulk... Wolverine, Storm, Iron Man was pretty fun to play with. I mean, at Comic-Con, they announced a bunch, and now I'm blanking out. I'll have to pull up the list. They announced, like, a huge list of characters at Comic-Con. So, I mean, I just want to say that I was really impressed, and I hadn't heard much about this game before I got to play it, and now I'm really excited to play this game. I just need to get that PC.
Put it in my eyeballs.
Marvel Heroes.
To my fingertips.
And as Dave already said, it's got a lot of the DNA of what they had first been considering for Diablo 3 back in the day. All right, folks, it is time for finishing moves as we draw this sucker to a close.
Finishing moves.
Yeah, it's good to be back, so I'm going to kick her off. I'm going to kick her off with this. As I briefly chatted about at the beginning of the show, Ariel and I powered through Borderlands 2, had an awesome time, immediately got the season pass, but also I'm having an awesome time, as we talked about before, with these freaking shift codes. I still insist that this is one of the smartest social tie-ins that has been devised yet, because I'll be damned if... Almost every time Randy tweets out one of those shift codes, if I'm at home, I will turn on my 360, I will go over and punch the code in. But even better than that is, I usually, because of the fact that I've now fired up the game, will be like, hey, you want to play some Borderlands? Because that gets us right back into the game. And I'm really happy because having finished the game, used my latest key, and I got a really awesome sniper rifle. Got a purple sniper rifle, and it's pretty freaking ridiculous.
Does it shoot purple?
It's purple is like...
Is it a slag weapon?
It is a slag.
I know.
It's slagging sniper rifle, which is perfect for Ariel and I because she's always like down in front fighting. So now I'm like standing back and slagging shit. And then she's just like beating the crap out of it. Awesome combination.
We had fun when we played together. It was good times.
Oh, you should see this thing now. This thing's ridiculous. Like the problem we have now is that at least half the time, if I get a good crit headshot because I'm also crit spec'd, it just kills everything. It's like just boom, dead. Boom, dead. Boomed it. And the expansion pack. Why do we not even talk about that? I guess we can talk about that. Ariel's going to try and be on the show soon, so by the way.
Oh, that'd be great.
The piratey stuff is so fun. It's ridiculously fun. It is really ridiculously fun. Like, I love like the pirate captain right off the bat being like this ridiculous character who right off the bat she's, yeah, we can be friends now. I'm going to stab you in the back, but you know what? I've gotten better at learning when to exactly stab my friends in the back.
I mean, they're known that game is known for its clever, witty writing. Like, it's one of the many reasons I love Borderlands.
Yeah, even coming out and having finished the main campaign, I found that this first DLC pack is really strong. It's really strong. It's really fun.
Well, all the DLCs for Borderlands were really strong, too, I think. I really enjoyed them all. Yeah.
There was one that people didn't like. The they liked General Knox.
Claptrap, maybe?
Claptrap was good. It was outsourced.
I liked that one, yeah.
And Ned's was good. It was the other one. The one. Anyway, doesn't matter.
This one
was
Mad Moxie?
Was that it?
You didn't like that?
I didn't play all of them.
How dare you?
It's basically like Fink's Slaughterhouse, essentially, was what Mad Moxie's Underdome was.
Yeah, that was it, maybe. That was a little maybe not as depth.
I mean, there was no story. I mean, we're getting off track.
We've gone off track. So. Anyway, so there you go. Great time. And I love the... And to cap it all off is, like, the most exciting part is, even if Resident Evil 6 wasn't that great, there's Resident Evil to play co-op, there's Halo to play co-op, and it's awesome.
Yeah.
Excited. I'm excited. Jeff Cannata, what's your finishing move?
I'm going to talk a little about a couple of board games. One you can play on iOS is a game that we reviewed on TRS a long time ago. And it was one of the first big Kickstarter success stories in board gaming. It was a game called Alien Frontiers. It is phenomenally fun. It's got a wonderful theme, space exploration, but it's got tons of references to the classic 1950s, 60s sci-fi authors, so Robert A. Heinlein, Isaac Asimov, Arthur C. Clarke, all that era. It's a great dice rolling game, really, really fun, great clever mechanics. Just came out with an expansion in the board game, and it just came out with its iOS version. Obviously, rolling dice not quite as fun on the phone as it is on a table, but still very cool game to check out. And I bring this up because I know you've had experience with it. You know, we played Resistance several times. Tons of fun. A great party game if you have more than six people. You know, this is a great...
And James Stevenson is best at lying in that game.
He is.
I will just say that.
There is a new version of Resistance called Resistance Avalon, which Resistance was a futuristic sort of spies type of a deal in the future. And this one takes it to Merlin and the Knights of the Round Table era, but it adds a couple of new dynamics. One person who is Merlin gets information that everybody else doesn't have. This is a really great, it's sort of like Werewolf. It's a discussion game where you're just trying to ferret out who's the liar, who's the traitor. Excellent couple of games. And lastly, please check out my comedy web series that I'm a part of. It's called Ground Game, and you can see it at jeffcannata.com. That's jeffcannata.com with two N's and one T.
Very nice, sir. I'm actually going to talk about a web series, too, and I know this is probably going to sound like shameless self-promotion, but I've been so excited about Halo 4 Forward Unto Dawn. It's the live-action Halo series that Machinima has partnered with Microsoft to bring to you guys, and if you're not watching it, I really, really encourage you to. It's one of probably, I can probably say it's probably like the best web series I've ever seen. The production is really fantastic.
Did you see my web series at Jeff Cannata?
I haven't seen it yet.
That's probably
That's
probably why. In this episode three, the first two episodes were a little bit of narrative setting up the action that's coming. Episode three was a pivotal episode, and episode four is coming tomorrow. And it's just coming today, excuse me, Friday. It's just
time travel is hard.
Yes, it is. It's very. It's just. It's. I don't know. I just like a. It's really
awesome.
I mean,
the production values are terrific.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I know some people have kind of knocked on some of the writing, but I think it's great. And if you guys are fans of Halo, or even if you're not fans of Halo, you don't need to know the lore to really enjoy this series. So please do check it out at Machinima Prime.
And that leaves it to you, Andrew.
All right. You know, I think we're probably, you know, some of the only people in the world that have Vitas. But there's something you should check out. It's called Frobisher Says. Frobisher Says. It came out on the PlayStation Store this week. It is WarioWare, but for your Vita.
Hey.
And it takes advantage of, you know, all the Vita gimmicks, you know, touchscreen, rear touch, you know, gyroscope, all that nonsense. And it's free.
Ooh.
Not free to play. You download it for free. Even if you're not a Plus member, you just download it. And the game is completely free. No microtransactions, nothing. So if you have a Vita and you're complaining you have nothing to play, now you do.
There you go. Something new catch? To play.
I guess you need a Vita.
Damn it.
The catch is
in my car right now.
And you need a Vita to play it. All right, everybody. That's the big show. Really good to be back. Thanks for holding down the fort last week.
Sure thing.
Everybody loves it when you host, by the way. You're a great host.
Well, thank you. I learned from the best.
I have nothing to do with that.
Yeah, he didn't say your name.
Oprah was in here earlier, and she teaches me every week.
And so today, for our studio audience, we have new cars!
Too bad our studio audience isn't... There's no studio audience.
I know. Big thanks to the Atlantis Group, as always, for hosting us here at their fabulous studios in Santa Monica. Micah on the boards, Del Rio there also in production, and Ryan Calvano doing our video and pre-show video for us. Big thanks to Machinima.com for letting us have the lovely Andrea Renee here on a regular basis.
Oh, thank you guys for having me. I always love coming and being on the show. So,
do we have your next already scheduled?
Probably not yet, but it'll probably be late November.
We will have some bombastic games to talk about. Ooh, then.
I'm thinking right after Hitman comes out,
which people have been loving.
Zav talked about it at length last episode.
You know what? One of the comments that we didn't get to was actually a really great thread of discussion about how taking us to task for...
Not talking about comments in the show.
For loving Dishonored, but not taking... And then taking Hitman to task when both of them are a series of programming choices. It's just one of them spells out for you. We're not going to discuss it now. We could save for next week, though. We could save for next week if you would have it come back. Big thanks to Jeff Cannata, as always, our partner in crime from Totally Rad Show. Anything else going on?
Mentioned stuff. Yeah.
All right, cool.
Web series at jeffcanada.com. Two wins, one T.
There you go. And Andrew Yoon, our senior editor at shacknews.com. Thank you, sir. And Warfighter. Professional Warfighter. Don't try this at home, kids.
I want to review a good game for once.
It's a cry for help. It's a cry for help.
Next week, we can talk about the Angel's Hat.
Yes, we can. A.K.A.
Angel's Hat.
A.K.A. There you go.
Halo, I said it. Oh. You didn't say it.
Hello to you, too. It's nice that you finally noticed I was here.
All right, let's get out of here. We still have a tailgate to do. We got some football picks coming up, a little fantasy update. But if you're not sticking around for that, thanks very much. That's your Week in Confirmed, and we are Ghost. This episode of Week in Confirmed is brought to you by Shutterstock.com and Hover.com.
Damn, what time is it?
I need a drink. Hangaway. I need a drink. Alizé. I need a drink. Hangaway. I need a drink. Champagne. I can't drink all by myself. I'ma need all of y'all help. I need a drink, absolutely. I need a drink, it's not. I need a drink, Hennessy. I need a drink, in a tonic. I can't drink all by myself. I'ma need all of y'all help.
It's only 12 o'clock, but I need another bottle. Cause me and my crew only know folks.
All right, everybody, welcome to this mid-season tailgate update.
Boom.
Jeff Cannata still getting destroyed in fantasy.
Yeah.
I can't believe I wasn't in your fantasy league. I'm actually doing, like I said earlier,
I can't believe you.
Four wins in a row. What?
Didn't we invite you?
I think you may have.
Yeah.
Maybe I said I had, I can't.
I think
you
said
what
you
it
had
was?
Too many.
I think, yeah, that's what it was, is that I had already committed and I didn't want to overcommit. Next year, it's on, like Donkey Kong.
Excellent. So I continue to do really well. In the West, I won again by the sliver of 91.5 to 89.5 over the Metropolis Blue Bombers. I was lucky there. I still have Eli's been carrying me really well there. I picked up Owen Daniels in the second week. He's been doing well for me. Marquez Colston. You faced two tough teams this week, by the way.
Yeah.
You lost to the High Cholesterols, who came in with 121.75 points, almost 120 points, carried by Vincent Jackson just going completely off. So they're in the West. The High Cholesterols, the team just mentioned, they are in the lead in Division One, and my Ghosts are still atop Division Two.
Well done, you.
And then in the East, my damn team, I'm actually 7-0 in that league.
7-0.
Undefeated. Yeah, I've gone undefeated. It's kind of awesome. In the East, my damn team lost to the New Jersey Solid Stakes 94.94 to 71.5.
Clever.
Yeah, the New Jersey Solid Snakes had Jordy Nelson, and that
be cool if you could have the winner of one league face off against the winner of another league. That'd be cool.
Yeah, maybe we'll have like a winners league next year or something. I don't know. We'll figure something out. And then you again, like here, you even faced the worst. Your opponent, Anna Magi, racked up 145 points last week.
A lot of points.
Yeah, had the terrible twosome of Drew Brees, who went crazy, and then this guy, like this guy, is not going to have any more weekends like this. LaRod Stephen Howling, Arizona running back, just like totally got off. So the Goodyear Daleks are still atop their side, and my damn team still ahead in that league. Both of us are 5-2. So moving on to our pick'ems.
I did pretty good there, although I don't understand this tie bullshit.
Well, because there was a push. We had a push.
Why? We shouldn't allow push. At least that many points to cover.
The points. It was a tie. It was a points push. The house got its nut, and that's all.
I was 2-0. And Del Rio, unfortunately, was also 2-0, so he stays atop the standings.
Yes, he does.
We had all the same freaking picks is the problem.
And I was 1-1-1 last week. 1-1-1 along with, of course, our engineering team. Michael, were you on the engineering last week?
We need to have some point fives in these numbers.
And James
pushes.
So, by the way, everyone's caught up. So Dave Mabee leading the way right now at 12-8 overall, followed closely by Jeff Cannata at 11-9. And then the guest space at 9-11. And then everybody else slotting in at 8-12. Andrea, James, engineering team here, and myself. I made a little bit of a comeback.
You did make a comeback.
Yeah, so, I think my problem is, like, sometimes I forget about the points and I just pick the winner. And I'm like, damn it, they didn't cover the points. Like that heartbreaking game last week. They didn't cover the points.
Which one is the heartbreaking game last week?
Was it Chicago? Didn't that happen?
Chicago Lions?
They didn't cover the points.
Chicago Lions.
Or am I getting that mixed up?
All right. We have three excellent games for you on tap this weekend. The first one is the Philadelphia Eagles coming off their bye. Now, they're a bit in disarray.
Oh, yeah. Firing people.
Yep. Looking for Vic to make a come. Actually, starting to call for maybe like Vic to sit down. They got a rookie quarterback. Come on. Stop the
Sold
insanity.
The farm for Vic.
Yeah.
Just gave away all their quarterbacks for Vic.
Kevin Cobb.
Yeah, he's doing all right.
Until he got injured.
Yeah. Right.
They're taking on the very, very hot Atlanta Falcons. The Falcons coming into Philadelphia. The Philadelphia is only favored by 2.5, so they're not even getting the respect of a full 3 points for home field advantage.
The Falcons are freaking the real deal.
They're on fire.
They are the real deal. I get that. The Eagles have solid defense. The Eagles are going to rally. They're at home. The Eagles are also a tremendous team under Andy Reid coming off the bye weekend. This is Philly's game all the way.
Wow.
I am in on this one all the way for Philly.
I'm going to take Atlanta.
I'm taking Atlanta as well. I know a couple of their games have been close margin wins, but a W is a W.
It's true. And then we will turn the
Except
booth
for
loose.
When it's an M.
That's true.
D, maybe? Which way are you going on this
Deep.
One?
Deep.
I'm sorry, I missed that. I was talking over you. He's going with the Falcons.
Curse you.
Micah, where are you going with this one? He's also with the ATL. Like, look, this is my opportunity to make some hay. Let's see. We have James's pick in, hot off of the email. He's also going. Well, let me see. He's also going with the Falcons.
Mm.
I'm telling you, Eagles at home, back together, coming off a bye week. Take it to the bank.
Interesting.
Then we have my beloved Dallas Cowboys. Mm-hmm. Another team that struggled a little bit last week. I mean, they played super conservatively.
Yeah.
And it still, at the same time, did not look all that great. However, opening game of the season, they looked fantastic in
that,
New York.
Yeah. Remember that?
And in
like,
New York.
In like 1995, they were amazing. So, you know.
Opening game of the season, they looked fantastic. They were in New York. They took on the defending Super Bowl champion Giants and took them down in their house. Now the Giants are back to Texas Stadium. The
Giants are playing a lot better than they were in
today.
And the
certainly
Giants
are
a fucking road favorite in my house. Get out of there. They're Cowboys are going to be pissed off. They're going to be pissed off. They're going to have a great game.
How about them Cowboys?
All
right,
The big problem the Cowboys have is that this week we learned that the star defensive player, Sean Lee, is out for the season.
Boom.
with a toe injury. And that is a very, very tough blow. He is the centerpiece around which the defense has really grown to rally. And that really worries me.
Are you telling me I really have to drop my second defense this year? I had to drop Ravens defense. Now I have to drop Cowboys defense again. Ugh.
If you are not playing situational defenses in the first place, I can't help you.
I don't have enough. There's not enough options. We have too many teams. Anyway, we're not talking about that. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm picking the Giants to win.
I want Del Rio to go first.
Dave Del Rio. He's going with the Giants. He's taking the road
favorite.
Side with
Garnett just to freaking gain some ground on you.
How about you, Micah? Where you want to go
conscience.
With this? Micah also with the Giants.
I can't in good conscience take the Cowboys. Come on.
What do you mean you can't
take
good
the
conscience?
Giants too.
Fine.
Damn it.
What do you have against me and my Cowboys?
Everything.
Why? Why?
Hated rival from way back, my childhood.
I got bad news for you. We don't even care about the 49ers.
Well, you should, because they're going to win the NFC.
Which is fine, but I mean, the Cowboys have been so NFC East.
Not if my Minnesota keeps beating you. What?
You might want to throw the ball to Vernon Davis, by the way. I've heard he's pretty good.
Well,
zero
we didn't need
targets.
To last week.
Zero targets last week.
We didn't need to.
Zero targets.
We had Frank Gore running for 1,000 yards.
I'm just saying. I'm saying until he got hurt.
138.
All right, so in our final game of the week that we're picking, I chose this one because I really thought it was an interesting line that makes it very interesting and difficult to pick. This is New Orleans Saints going on the road. Granted, they've had a tough win-loss record, but look at their performance last week. I mean, they're not like dead. It's not like they're a because then became a horrible team. On the road, going into Denver, the Broncos are a 6-point favorite.
Very surprised at that.
That's a lot of points.
A lot of points. Peyton putting them up. All right, Del Rio, what are you doing?
He's ruthless. You are ruthless. Okay, so if you guys if they can't hear, Dave has chosen the Broncos.
I'm picking the Saints.
And Jeff is going.
I was
going to
pick
Saints.
Whatever team he did not pick.
I'm going Broncos too.
Andrea also going Broncos.
And I know it's a lot of points, but I believe in Peyton Manning.
Michael, what do you think there? He's going with the Saints.
Who dat?
You got to go with the Saints here.
Yeah, 6 points. I don't know. Saints are freaking unpredictable this year.
Don't underestimate playing for pride.
Yeah.
And this is another one of those cases where a lot of the storylines will be Drew Brees, Peyton Manning, two greats.
Yeah. As well it should be.
And Denver has the capability of taking away a receiver. One of the things, though, that the Saints do so incredibly well is they spread the ball around, and they are very versatile. You know, if they need to.
So do the Broncos under Manning.
Yeah, I hear you. And Decker is still playing well. We'll see if Thomas can get off. If Thomas can get off, you know, then Peyton can keep this thing close. I still think, though, that the Broncos are a well-balanced team, but not necessarily a team built for a shootout.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see, like, all it's going to take is for the Saints to get on a roll and, you know.
Yeah, this is going to be like 38-31, something like that.
So if you think it's going to be 38-something, then my concern is I don't think that Denver has quite the horsepower to play that game with the Saints. So there you go. I'm taking the Saints.
All right.
I'm with you on this one. So
strange bedfellows. Here we go.
All right. Hope you guys are enjoying the season. Hope your teams are doing great. We will be back next week to see how the chips have fallen.